Speaking Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
T-10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
Weekend confirmed.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
All right, everybody, summertime, and we are doing it right. We are live in my living room.
That's right. We are.
Yes. For a little summer weekend confirmed party. We got beer. We've got a cat for Jeff to lick.
I may have licked the cat.
It's an adorable cat, in my defense. Adorable.
So there you go. Now you have ample reason to rush out and go hit YouTube right now to see the new Weekend Confirmed pre-show cat videos.
Yeah.
We're going to do cat videos from now on.
It's not that we're desperate for views. It's we're just that we're going to put cats in all videos from now on.
Well, actually, we are desperate for views. Let's be honest about things. We need more views, so we're going the all
cat. You just need to put
route.
More boobs on your thumbnails. That's your problem. See, Ryan's like, I had that idea. Yeah.
Did you? Mm-hmm. Ryan was fixing to leave, too. Like, what was that all about?
Yeah, right? He was about to run out on us to try to go back to work or something.
Lame.
That's air quotes. You guys can't see that, but I just did air quotes.
Anyway, this is Weekend Confirmed. Hope you're having an excellent summer. We figured it is August and time to have a summer party the way you're supposed to have them.
House party,
right? Exactly.
You have a lovely home.
Jeff Cannata is here.
Yeah, I'm enjoying.
I totally did, and you missed it.
I'm enjoying the.
What did I miss?
The summer breeze. Off the,
that
off
was
the
you?
Marina.
Yeah, it's pretty hot in here, though.
It is very warm in here.
It's a little warm.
It's heating
Look,
up over there.
It's not bad.
No, it's not terrible.
Yeah, that's the warm. Other Jeff there, Mr. Jeff Mattis.
Yeah, the one that's schwitzing.
Yeah, so, I said in the pre-show that we're going to be sweating profusely.
I think you said we're going to be sweating balls.
That's probably what I said.
You probably hear the fans going, too. There's alcohol's not helping that.
Yeah. Well, look, here's the thing is it's already a little late and it'll get cooler and you know, you live in the marina, you don't have air conditioning, sorry.
This is going to be a good. We have some hot games to talk about for sure.
Oh, yeah, hot games.
Lest you think this will all be just shenanigans.
Oh, Andrea wanted to be introduced.
Oh. Nobody needs it. She needs no introduction.
Andrea, it's not video. They can't see you do that.
In case you didn't know.
She's bowing. She's bowing.
Curtsying.
It is the lovely stalwart fixture of Weekend Confirmed Hall of Fame.
Our one and only girl. Our one and only girl. Our main squeeze.
My first love.
I'm your first love, really?
Yes.
That's kind of sad.
Why?
Because, come on.
Because she doesn't love
honest.
You back.
We only met, like a year and a half ago.
Oh, but baby.
Oh, well.
Right from the first moment, there was something special.
I'm getting uncomfortable.
I feel like, do we have Barry White someplace close? Because
Oh, yeah. We got dueling Barry White. Barry White and THX.
I'd like to thank my bros on the back up here.
Barry White and Gary Beige.
If Garden didn't mention it, this is a Weekend Confirmed summer party, including beer and bourbon.
No, there's no beer. What are you talking about?
So hopefully you guys are going to be consuming along with us. It'll make the show more fun for everybody.
Larry
so,
H.L. Oh, yeah.
All right.
Should we establish
Let's
the
talk
rules?
About games.
Should we establish the rules for the drinking contest or a game
yes.
for them?
Anytime yes. one of us drinks, they drink.
All right.
But they don't know when we drink.
Oh, yeah. They will know.
We should set like some keywords or things.
Some keywords.
I'm drinking!
There you go.
Yes. Oh,
Mattis.
Yes.
The sound effects. That's
Man,
genius.
The most overused sound effect on Weekend Confirmed.
Very polarizing the party episodes, but we have to have a party episode every now and again.
Yeah.
So if you don't like party episodes, you know what? We'll be back next week with a non-party episode.
But so there you go.
Here we go. It's all right. We have some good games.
We've got Sleeping Dogs.
Yes.
Yeah, Sleeping Dogs.
We've got Darksiders 2.
Ooh, yeah.
We've got a smorgasbord of new games from Gamescom.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you use smorgasbord because it's in Europe.
Yeah.
I think that sounds European, whether it is or not. And it just kind of fits well.
It makes me think of old people eating, actually.
Me too.
There you go. So it's
it
just
actually
like
makes me
the,
think of that scene from Charlotte's Web with the rat at the carnival. No one.
I need some more bourbon.
You know, I don't feel like we had jokes like that last week.
No.
I'm gonna murder all of you. I'm going to murder you.
In a good way, though,
so,
right? In a
what
good
are we
way.
Starting with?
Sleepy so Dogs, right?
And I'm definitely going to talk about Lost Odyssey in this show if it kills me.
It may.
And then we have nothing new to tell you about fantasy football other than that I have to form the leagues. And as soon as I do have the leagues formed, then I will get figuring out on the invites. It's going to be 14 teams.
Luckily, everybody, Garnet's in charge of making them
yes,
happen.
Yes, it shall happen.
So it'll happen.
So there you go. So you guys have been playing Sleeping Dogs. So Sleeping Dogs, if you aren't familiar with it, is a game that is an open world GTA-like game where you play a undercover cop who goes into the triads of Hong Kong to break them. UFG is a cool studio. They're up there in Canada where they pulled in a number of guys from Black Box. Hmm. So one of the things that was initially cool about this game was it looked like we'd have excellent driving sequences, which, you know, we got into that debate last week with Jeff about, you know, how good was the driving in Grand Theft Auto. You liked it. You had a lot of people who actually supported you, gave you propers for that.
In terms of just pure driving physics, I think it's still the best open world game out there.
So, and then the other question is, how well does the fighting hold up? Because much like a Jet Li movie, what tends to happen is you get into group fights and it's everybody standing around taking
someone's
their
stabbing
turn.
You in the back, you mean?
Oh, well...
That's what happens in Sleeping Dogs.
It's
with a kitchen knife.
Although I've been told I'm good at stabbing people in the back.
It's
oh, well, I'm gonna let that one lie. Let's continue.
Like a sleeping dog. It's ripping off what I wish everybody would rip off, which is Batman, which is, you know, Arkham Asylum.
Well, should we start with the troubled past of this game?
Yeah,
too? Like,
sure.
This game had no right to be remotely successful just because.
Well, right. That's
true
where
crime,
I was
right? It started as
well,
a true
so it
crime
actually
game.
Didn't even start as a true crime game. It started as a UFG project, and then Activision came in because, of course, when you're a studio building up a game, you're looking for a publisher. This seemed to be a good fit for Activision, who was looking for a way to revitalize the true crime brand. And keep in mind, they had done some good stuff. You know, we look back at True Crime and sort of chuckle. There was definitely a point in time where that game was pretty fun to play. It wasn't serious. It wasn't going to be like the greatest Grand Theft Auto game or whatever. But there was a lot of fun bits of true crime.
I disagree, but
you don't think so?
I really disliked it. I only played L.A. But New York came
that
out,
that was the
too.
Second one.
I never played New York.
You should, but you should have played the first one.
L.A.
is
the first one.
Yeah.
That's the one I played.
But you didn't like that?
Did not care.
All right. Well, so that's fine. To each their own. But they were looking for a way to revitalize that brand. They looked at this and said, well, we'll put the true crime name on it. And from the start, it seemed like a bit of a stretch to fit these things together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then they lost that deal. You know, it was like, oh, it's not working out. We're not where we want. And then, you know, Square Enix comes in, picks it up, lets them finish it. It becomes Sleeping Dogs, which, by the way, like also...
Not a great title.
Not a great title. No.
Terrible title.
There are no dogs.
It's way better than having true
crime. There's a guy named Dog Eyes in the game. But.
Yeah.
Oh, and so I want you guys to talk about it. One of the things that initially struck me, because I've checked out the first hour of the game, is, man, it feels like one of those, and I apologize for this, and maybe I'm wrong. It feels to me like the VO is trying too hard. It's trying too hard to sound like...
I don't know
like I'm not even going to do it because I feel like if I tried to do that voice right now, it would sound like one of those bad.
You mean it sound like you were being racist?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think you can level that at this game.
Okay, I'm just saying that no, that's the way it sounded to me. Like
it's not.
There was a scene right in the beginning of the game when the guy's like there. He's like, oh yeah, man, she first time sucked my cock, and I'm like, dude, seriously, like.
Yeah.
That's not adding anything to the game.
But okay, racist dialogue is Just Cause 2 or voice acting. I mean, that is what I mean, that is really bad. This didn't strike me as being particularly offensive either.
They actually had a pretty impressive voice cast.
They do have
lineup.
An impressive
I mean,
English
Lucy
voice.
Liu's even in the game, which, you know.
And I bet Lucy Liu's not going, oh, I'm talking weird. I don't even know how to do a girl's Chinese voice. But I mean,
no,
she's not going to
try.
It probably is better that I don't. But I doubt that she's doing some kind of fake accent thing.
I will say
it's not like Madonna trying to do her British voice.
But that was the least of my concerns with this game.
I'm learning some awesome Cantonese curse words though.
Yes, true.
Because they, you know, if you have the subtitles on, they parenthetical, so it flips back and forth between English primarily and
so what'd you pick
Cantonese.
Up?
I'm picking them up.
I made the mistake.
I need to go back.
He's not confident enough to display his skills yet.
It forces you. The game forces you to go through the options before you play.
Mm-hmm.
And I saw subtitles and I saw it. Listed as on.
Oh,
or something.
It's weird. Yeah.
And I turned it off.
I turned it off,
which
too.
Means it's off even not in when anybody is talking, no
right.
matter what language they happen
Wait,
to be
see,
speaking.
That's pretty cool.
And I was like, oh crap! But that's kind of interesting. Like, I don't understand what they're saying until they start speaking.
So
English.
The Chinese goes by, and you
yeah. So I was like, I should probably go back and just turn it because you can turn on Cantonese. But I saw that, and I was like, oh, I don't want Cantonese subtitles. I have
right,
no
so
use
I guess depending
that.
On right. what you like about a game, you might either like or dislike this. The first hour or so of the game is very scripted.
Yes. Yeah.
There's a tremendous amount of hand-holding and cinematic scenes and tutorial stuff you have to go through.
That's a good thing. So it teaches you all the systems.
I was saying, I feel like I haven't really seen the game yet.
Did you get to any of the driving stuff?
No, I didn't.
Okay, see.
And I was hoping to, because that was the part when I had demoed it years ago that I thought was really the most rewarding part of it.
I rage quit in the second hour.
You rage quit in the second hour?
Okay. I did.
I need to.
Yes. Yeah. I tweeted last night while I was playing the game that I rage quit Sleeping Dogs and didn't know if I was going to pick it back up again. I took an hour long break and then I told myself I have to play this because I have to talk about it on Weekend Confirmed. And honestly, I personally was not drawn to this game at all.
You know, I'm like, a slave driving son of a bitch like that, by the
you
way.
You are. As a regular consumer, if I wasn't in the video games industry, I would never have even thought of trying this game or picking
really?
Up this game. Yeah. Just because this is not the kind of game that speaks to me as a gamer. It's
now,
not
now
the
do you like Hong Kong cinema at all? Like,
not really.
Okay, so
well, there you go.
Do you like GTA?
I liked Grand Theft Auto Vice City. Hmm. All the other GTAs I never really spent that much time with, and I think it had to do with something about Vice City and like that whole
it's
80s
fabulous.
Vibe. I just really gravitated towards and really loved. I really tried to love GTA 4 as much as everybody else loves it, but I just didn't love it the way that I wanted to. And I think it had a lot to do with like side quests and shit, but we don't need to get into that right now. We're talking about Sleeping Dogs. And the thing that I thought that was really inapproachable was the combat and what I mean by that is that I felt like when I started to play it, it was really difficult for me to get into it and be successful. And I feel like when you're playing a game for the first time, like, I know that some people really don't like the tutorial system and have me like press this button to do this or make this combo with these buttons, but I like that for a franchise or a new game that I've never played before.
And Sleeping Dogs totally does that.
Yeah, they do. But the thing for me was there's one button for action.
That's
like,
not true. There's grapple and there's counter.
But a grapple isn't like an action button. It's like it's a defensive button. You know, it's like a counter button. You know what I mean? There's only one button that you use. Well, in the beginning, you can learn more complicated moves in more combos like as you go along. But I really struggled, and it was really frustrating for me to the point that I rage quit. Like, I was at this one boss battle, and I like died like 6 or 7 times in a row, and I couldn't figure out what I was doing wrong. I got so mad because I'd literally be grappling with an enemy, and another enemy would stab me in the back while I was grappling with somebody else.
So here's where we need Leahy, because you know what? Leahy would come correct. He'd be like, try sucking less, and maybe you need girlfriend mode.
It's a game that really wants you. It wants you to do counters. It's a game that really puts a premium on countering.
It does. If you do not counter those enemies when they're flashing red, like, you will die really, really quickly.
Come on, they like flash bright fucking
and
red.
Mechanically, this is just a slightly less polished version
of Batman.
Oh, yeah.
No, I wouldn't even say slightly less. Batman's combat is superior in every way.
Batman has
a thousand
extra frames of animation per.
No one's going to argue with that, but I think I played the demo at E3, and I think it leaps and bounds better than it even was a few months ago, the combat system.
Really?
And I actually had a good time.
Yeah, and I didn't play it at E3, so I can't speak to that. I will say some of the animations are cool when you use the throwing mechanic, when you like grapple with someone and then you like throw them into an environmental object.
Yeah.
Like, some of that stuff is pretty awesome, like getting to shove some guy's face into like a fan and having like the blood spurt. Like, that.
Yeah. Did you ever play The Punisher?
No, I didn't.
You should play The Punisher.
The Bourne game is like that too.
Yeah, with the violence like
so,
that.
So, I mean,
they had the like environmental.
But it gets to the point where it's almost like rinse and repeat. And I know that I've talked to some people who are farther along in the game. I'm about 5 hours in now.
So you stuck with it after that?
I rage quit, and then I watched TV for an hour, and then I gave myself a pep talk.
And you got into it.
Yes, and then I went back to it. I watched So You Think You Can Dance.
Oh, that'll do it.
That's right.
Here's sort of the
Mia
weird.
Michaels week. What?
I would be willing to bet. Andrea, that
Dancing
that,
with the Stars that you'll way better, right?
You'll play some more of this, and you'll get to a point where you're like, "Oh, maybe the combat's a little too easy." Like,
that's possible. Like, I've talked to some people who say that once you learn some of the advanced moves by going to the gyms and stuff like that. Wait, what's happening?
He's giving you an indication.
He's like holding up his phone and shit's happening. I don't know. He's like 14 minutes.
Semaphore going on over
there. But for me, if I'm like 2 to 3 hours in and I'm getting super frustrated, I feel like That's a pretty big time commitment. That's like most movies are 2 to 3 hours. You know what I mean? Yeah.
But still, you went back and are in now 5 hours.
No, I'm still like, I really just feel like it's a direct ripoff of Grand Theft Auto.
Ooh.
You said that it feels a little bit like it. And I go, no, this is exactly Grand Theft Auto set in China.
Okay, so
that's not a bad thing.
Give me your assessment.
It's not a bad thing, but it's not original.
Like Saints Row 3, though. Like, give me your 3 sentences.
You know, what's interesting about you bringing that up is that I had this conversation with somebody else, and they're like, but what did you think about Saints Row? That was a total ripoff, too. And I said, you know, I think the thing that I really liked about Saints Row versus Sleeping Dogs is that at least with Saints Row, like, there was some kind of, like, kind of hooks, right? There's this outlandish, crazy storyline. There's all of this, like, comedic effect to the game, from the environments to the characters and the outfits. You get to customize what you're wearing. I could literally
customize what you're wearing in this game.
Not to the extent that you can at the beginning of the game. In Saints Row, I could make a girl
myself a nice outfit at the very beginning.
Yeah,
a V-neck
t-shirt and a pair of jeans.
So
super,
down to
super
what,
nice.
It's down to
I could
what you
literally
can
run around
yourself
in a bikini
as, really?
If I wanted to. Well, no, it's not. No. It's not down to that. That's just one small piece of the
puzzle. Man, they do not have SCUK in this game. Fuck it.
Come on. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying for Saints Row, to me, I thought there was a fun factor involved that wasn't involved in Sleeping Dogs.
But that's the whole play of Saints. You're talking about Saints Row the Third, by the way?
Yes.
So that's the whole play of Saints Row the Third, right, is to be on the funny side.
To be over the top, to be a flip side.
They're not going for that here.
To be fair, the hooks for Sleeping Dogs are what is a pretty interesting story and a setting that is very different from any of the GTA games.
So Jeff, your dig
exactly.
The road
I was just
like,
about to say
so
that.
Good.
It's like, a complete different game. All of a sudden, it's just getting myself to drive on the left side of the road.
So Jeff, you're digging it. Tell me about why. Why you're digging it.
I had really low expectations going in because every time I'd seen it, both at a GDC and at E3, I really thought it clearly wasn't done and it didn't look polished, and I was really had low expectations, and maybe that's why it exceeded my expectations to such an extent, but. Boy, the game looks great. The environment is really interesting and dynamic and is substantially different than being in New York City or Miami or any of those places. It really does feel like I'm in a foreign land. And I felt like the story is interesting. You know, you are this double agent, so you're and that obviously is a gimmick to let you do illegal things.
I'm going to come back to that double agency thing.
Yeah, I mean, it's clearly a gimmick to let you do illegal things and also still be a good guy.
Of course.
But I like being able to pick and choose my good missions and my bad missions, and it's got some really interesting things. Like, you can set up surveillance cameras in your apartment and do certain, set them up around the city and get, you know, peg people and make arrests that way.
And I think you actually, like, your good guy rating actually goes up more if you do a mission without... running a bunch of pedestrians over, knocking a bunch of,
which is
a bunch
exactly
of property
what I
damage.
Didn't like. I mean, there's a lot of things that I do like about this game. I want to make that clear that I'm not coming away from this experience, even though I rage quit in the beginning. I'm not going, oh my god, this game sucks. That's not what I'm saying at all. This is actually a really good game. Yes. Oh my god, stop putting the kitty over here. You're distracting me. I knew he would be a distraction. What I'm saying is, like, part of the fun of that whole GTA vibe of the open world driving is I'm going to run the fucking, you know, stoplight over. I'm going to hit the fire hydrants and run into these pedestrians and cars. And you lose points for doing that in this game. You lose your cop score points.
I think that's an interesting dynamic.
And to me, I'm like, what? Why even? I mean, you really want me to drive safe and slow and brake behind people? That takes the whole fun out of having a driving mechanic
maybe,
in a game for me.
Maybe, but maybe it adds a
then
different
it's like
kind
LA
of
Noir.
Challenge. Maybe it adds a different kind of challenge that adds a little, you know, level of verisimilitude.
Well, and I was still racing up the wrong side of the street and weaving in between cars and stuff. I was just much more cognizant of, okay, I better not, like, do something super stupid. Like, I really do want to make sure I'm not hitting everything in sight. So, you know, I kind of like that extra little added level of incentive not to... You know, run everything.
And that's fair, but I do really like how they have integrated, you know, the social aspect of it. Whereas, like, I would make a really fast run, and they'd be like, you know, you are number one of your friends for achieving this top speed or making this mission in a certain time. That to me is a really cool thing that I think is kind of like this next wave of, you know, of gaming that really integrates the social aspect. That I thought was done really well, and I really like that aspect of
one of the concerns I had, especially during the demos, was they showed a lot of the pre-planned story missions where you had a lot of chase this guy and make this jump and make sure and hit A at the right time and do that kind of stuff.
All it reminds me of Assassin's Creed,
so
honestly.
Did you find yourself getting sucked into those, and were they working out all right?
Not my favorite part of the game. It's an interesting... It's got that dynamic, like, you know, context-sensitive A button, so when you're next to a table, you can slide over it.
Or you're running up to a bunch of crates or whatever, you jump over the crate.
Never my favorite part of Assassin's Creed, those chases.
So is there too much of that in this? Because that was one thing I was worried there would be a lot of that.
I didn't find there to be too much of it. It peppers it in, but it didn't overwhelm
me. Now, have you guys seen, speaking of chases, there was a random event that I ran into that was not a mission, it was not a side mission, it was not a whatever. I was just walking down the street to my next objective, and... some lady's like, oh my God, that guy stole my purse. Mm. And I'm like, where's this guy? And I look around, and there's, sure enough, there's a dude running down the street, and I ran and caught up to him and brought her purse back to the dude.
So sort of
there's
red,
a lot of that.
Sort of Red Dead Redemption-like?
Yeah, because it wasn't even, I didn't even get a flashing mission icon that like she was in distress. I was saw her, saw the dude.
There's a lot of those people who are like, hey man, can you help me?
Yeah.
You've done that? You're driving by, and the guy's like, the guy in that car looks very helpful. Hey, help me!
Hey, hey, player
of this
game. It's
the shoes you're wearing, because now they've identified you as part of the gang.
That's right.
Okay, fancy outfit you bought.
You can see all the games I have sitting around here. If I'm on the fence on Sleeping Dogs, I'll let you go last, Andrea. You can tell me why I shouldn't get it. Jeff, why should I get it?
I think if you're a fan of open world games like GTA, I think it's a solid entry in that genre, and much to my surprise, really plays pretty well and adds some interesting dynamics to the mix that hadn't been around before. I was pleasantly surprised by it.
Yeah, I'm a little less far along than Jeff is, but I echo his sentiments.
You're on Go Team.
I'm on Go Team, yeah. Right. I mean, and maybe part of this too, and I have to qualify this, is that it's been so long since a AAA or anything really good came out in the retail space that, you know, I'm starved for something good, so maybe that is coloring my perception a little bit, but...
And I'm not, like I said, I'm not saying don't get this game. I'm just saying I rage quit in the beginning because I found it very frustrating.
But are you going back to it?
Only because I feel like I have to, not because
Why?
I want to.
Wait, what do you mean by you have to go back to it?
Because
you're not even gonna be on
the
show.
You could just let
again.
Sleeping Dogs lie.
I could.
Yes! Yes!
Because...
way too
me,
proud of yourself.
Yeah, I know, right? Congratulations. Someone give him a pat on the back.
I got you. Thanks,
Brad. I'll just hang out the cat.
Down.
Just hang out the cat.
Like again, as I'm saying, like I agree with you. Like for an open world, interesting environment experience, this game is solid. I'm not compelled by any of the characters. I don't like the protagonist. I honestly like text message and go on Twitter in the cutscenes. That's how much I don't care about the story. And
sounds like you have ADD.
I do have ADD, but normally I pay attention in cutscenes. Like when I played Max Payne, like I was like sucked in the whole way because the writing was so good in that game. And there's just something about this game that just isn't grabbing me. It doesn't mean that the game is bad. It just means for me personally, this is not a game that I go, oh my God, I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, you're a racist.
Kanata.
I'm just kidding.
No, I think it actually brings out a good point about this, though, is this is very much a genre film sort of game, right? You're either into what it's about with the Hong Kong style presentation and the triads and undercover cop stories, or you're not. And if you're not, it's clearly not going to connect with you. It's not like something you're going to hop in and play I'm going to run around Hong Kong and shoot some fools and drop in a car. That's why about Saints Row the Third. That's why Saints Row the Third works, is because story actually really doesn't matter that much in that, right?
It couldn't matter
it's
less.
All about just going in and having fun with the game mechanics, all the little toys it gives you, the VTOL jet, the different weapons, whatever it might be that you want to play with, it's all right there, which is why they didn't hold it back at the beginning.
In the same way that GTA 4 is interesting because you've never played a guy like Niko Bellic in a game before, this world, I've never really been in this kind of a way. And you said, just driving on the other side of the road alone is like, oh yeah, I'm really in a different culture.
Yeah, like Yakuza was like that series was the closest allegory to this, and it's still obviously not at all the same. But it gives you that sort of like, oh wow, like as a Westerner who hasn't really spent any time over there, like it's cool to be in that environment instead of like, oh, I'm in New York again, or oh,
I think you hit on the same thing there, is that if people have picked up Yakuza before and been like, oh, I just don't get it, I think a big part of it is like you have to have at least a middling interest in dropping into Kabukicho as a Yakuza and interacting in that world.
100%
and
if you don't, right.
Yeah. Because it's about recreating that experience. And right. that's part of what's cool, I think, for a lot of folks who've been into this, is that it's about recreating that Hong Kong experience.
And the main character is a fish out of water also. So that's you're kind of cool. brought into that world through his perspective. Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say that the writing isn't a little clunky and gratuitous. I mean, it's that video game yeah. kind of like dropping F-bombs every other second just because we can and we want to make it gritty. It's almost gritty for gritty's sake sometimes. And it's all really very violent. But it's still pretty interesting and it's a fun world to be in.
And I love the fact that 2 hours in an open world game, I have not picked up a gun yet.
Yeah, that's also awesome.
I love it. No, kitchen I totally knife, agree. That's all you get is a kitchen knife.
Oh, I totally agree.
Wow, so you see,
it's better. It's a little like Shenmue. It's like Shenmue meets GTA.
Well, and it makes the combat a little bit. I mean, everything's a little bit more drawn out because of that. Because you can't just shoot a guy in the head. And
this gets me enthusiastic about Sleeping Dogs, actually, because it's really like every time something comes up, it's like Andrea has one point of view, and the Jeffs have another point of view, and it's definitely.
But Andrea and
is
the
it
Jeffs.
Always Andrea against the Jeffs? It's not kind always of. That way.
Not always.
Only when it comes to the dogs.
Okay.
And that's great because I think it, far better that it be a game that's polarizing like that and is picking up some people at the same time, not turning them on, as opposed to just, yeah, it's all right. You know, yeah. It's cool, whatever. I think that's a mark of a game that if you're interested in it, you're like, hey, yeah, this is something I might be interested in. Then you're like, yeah, well, actually, I should go get that because this is cool and I'm getting off on it. It's like, I like that.
Well, and again, like I said, I don't want people to think that I'm like knocking on the game. The game is a solid game. The mechanics of the game are solid. I just got frustrated with you know the combat until I got the hang of it and the story just
she needs a gun
me.
And something else.
She needs a gun and space powers, science fiction powers.
I'm just waiting for Borderlands 2, okay?
Sweet Mary Mother, I am
a,
so with you on that one.
A couple of guns in
so
game.
With you on that
a
one.
A bazillion, in fact.
I think it was more than that.
After the break, I definitely want to talk about Darksiders.
All right, we'll go right. We'll come back. We'll talk about Darksiders, which is one of the games that's up here on my big wall of things that I need to be playing.
Yeah.
It's past shame.
I'm just really glad. I don't know if you had the same thing, but I'm just really glad that as of yesterday, I got past my death date. And did you get one of those?
The app?
No, did you get the freaking tombstone
yeah,
with your
tombstone.
Actual
I
birth date and death
yeah,
date on
I got
it?
The tombstone, yeah.
Creepy.
Yeah. It is a
freaking
little bit
creepy.
All right. Well, we will get this thing back on track. We will take a little break. When we come back on the other side, we will have refreshed glasses, a snack or two, and Darksiders to all that and more as Weekend Confirmed continues.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from ShackNews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from Weekend Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices.
We do not even need...
Who has a Palm device, really?
There needs to be a separate podcast for what happens between the podcasts.
Yeah.
Behind I know everybody scenes. Hates it when we say that, but seriously, this time?
No, there's definitely not. Because it involved sea lions.
It involved...
Oh, the cat didn't make it! Unbelievably adorable.
No, wait, to be fair, the cat is still alive. The cat did. This is not like Jaws where it's like, the cat didn't make it!
That wouldn't
like,
be adorable. That would be sad and sad.
Just don't let him drink your beer and we're all good.
We'll be best buds if he drinks my beer.
Drunk kitty.
Love. All right.
So we're going to move on. We're going to talk about some Darksiders too. But you know what? I want to take a little detour here for a moment because one of the things we got into with that game there was some about how polarizing it is, right? As we're coming up on the fall season, like we're having a lot of fun this summer, obviously. We're here having a party. Everyone's having a good time. But it's going to get serious about game reviews. Remember how, you know, every year people get all melodramatic about their favorite game, got this score, and who said what about what. And even today I was already getting pulled into it a little bit because there was a rather low, and I would... You know, a rather low score for The Last Story, which came out today, actually came out this week, although it's a little hard to get. I have a pre-order on it, and I guess Amazon and everybody else got so backed up or XSEED wasn't prepared enough that my pre-order got delayed. I thought it was going to be back ordered for a little bit, but I'm supposed to actually get it today, as you're listening to this on Friday. I'm supposed to get it on Friday. But anyway, very much looking forward to that. I could talk about the last story. So
go for it.
Because I'm super excited about that game.
Yeah.
Well, I'll give a little intro because I'm going to be playing that, and then we'll talk about this reviews issue that I have. So last story is one of the three games that Operation Rainfall was keen to come over. And the third one's never going to come, so we're not going to worry about that. Of course, the first one was Xenoblade Chronicles, which Ariel played all the way through. Right. It was a massive undertaking. Had a lot of MMO styling to it, action combat. This one is Mistwalker. And you guys know I've been playing the shit out of Lost Odyssey, which we will talk about, but I'm going to transfer that to later because I want to talk about that as a separate thing. And Mistwalker was Sakaguchi's new outfit once he left behind the Final Fantasy teams. You know, there was some talk about that having been a result of the ill-fated movie that they did. But however that came to be, anyway, he went on to do Mistwalker. This game is Mistwalker. And more importantly, he served as director on this game. And he hasn't served as director on a Final Fantasy stretching all the way back to Final Fantasy V. Mm-hmm. So that's a big deal. It has Nobuo Uematsu on the instrument, on all of the composing for the music. The music is evidently dramatic and fantastic, so I'm really looking forward to that. And it has an action-based combat system, which I think is really where the Japanese popular games, such as Monster Hunter, haven't really transferred enough into what we think of in the West as their game. So, you know, obviously in the West, we think of a Japanese role-playing game as being this big, slow, turn-based game. And there's been a number of examples that simply are not that game. Even Final Fantasy XII went into a more MMO-driven sort of combat system. And we've seen a number of other games. Xenoblade, obviously, was one of them. Action combat, a big part of why people like Mass Effect, right? I mean, we're going to talk about Mass Effect Leviathan some, I think. And I think that's a lot of what draws people in. So that right there is a plus for Last Story. Great world. And then some people may debate this. I'm excited because I've been reading that the main story quest progress of the game is about 25 to 30 hours. And you know what? I'm kind of, like 25 to 30 hours, I'm good with that. I'm good with that. And maybe it's because of where I am.
Play like three of them. Just kidding. Three of the hours. It's a joke.
I see what you did there, Jeff.
No, but what do you mean by you're good with you're excited or you're good as like that's just enough?
I'm good with that being a real, you know, like one of the things
it doesn't need to be 70 is what you're saying.
See, I don't mind if a game is 70 hours, that's fine as long as, you know, 25 of that isn't grinding in the same area over and over and over and over again. Like
I think it's really challenging to do a game that's going to be over, say, I'm trying to think what the number would be for me. It's somewhere out there around 40 hours. It's somewhere out there around 40 hours where I'm starting to think that, you know what, I really would like this experience consolidated and drawn together into a picture, and then let me have that picture. And if I want to do more in the world, I'd be glad to come back and play more. And maybe that's some of what Western role-playing games suffer from, is that I want to have an experience, and I love that games are not television shows or movies. We're not limited to a 1 hour serialized format or a hour and a half to 2.5 hour strict linear format. You know, this is a game. It can do what it needs to do. It can run 10 hours. It can run 20 hours. It can run 30 hours. I think, though, that there's also a argument to be made for drawing an end spot to it, making a clear arc, giving me story progression, keeping me paced throughout all of that and engaged. And I'm really hopeful that that's what Lost Story does. I'm really looking forward to playing it. So there was a very low review for it, and immediately as soon as I heard the source, I was like, oh, well, okay, so who cares? So this brings up the question about reviews this fall. Obviously, as much as we all love games, we're not going to be able to play everything we want to.
Well, when it's okay, because everything's moved into March anyway.
Yeah, March.
Q1 is the new Q3.
When you guys
Q4.
Go to, well, not anymore. It's got Metal Gear Revengeance, isn't it?
Easy for you to say.
Exactly. When you guys go to read a review or go to watch a review, what do you particularly enjoy, or what makes you get something out of the review? And not to like ride you guys' jock, but one of the things I like about Totally Rad Show is that when I'm watching a Totally Rad Show review, I feel like, hey, these are some dudes that I click with, and like I know that if Danny says this, or if Alex says this, or Jeff says that, where they're coming from and whether or not I will agree with them. And like, you know, there's some things that I know, hey, Danny's going to not like this. And I'm going to be like, I'm going to probably like that because he didn't like it.
Yeah. I think that's what we've always lived and died on with that show is it's about personality first. It's about us, really, and what we're into. And then if you kind of get a flavor of the kinds of things we're into, that you can help you inform your decision. We've never ever purported to give a objective score. We've very much resisted that all the way at the beginning of the show. A lot of people would write us, hey, can we just give us a score or just a thumbs up, a thumbs down? And it's always been for us more about the discussion and talking about what we like or what we didn't like, rather than saying, you know,
so where eight, do you guys,
seven.
Where do you guys come down on this? And when you read a review, do you want to read a review from someone who's, you know, endeavoring to be a 30,000 foot objective reviewer, or do you want someone who's really into it? And then, do you care whether or not they're a fan of that genre or not?
The other thing I want to say too is we are also, while I guess you could classify what we do on TRS as reviews, we don't think of them as a quote unquote review. And it's similar to what we do on this show, is it's more about our experience with it, which is why in the first block, Andrew, when you were saying, well, you know, it's a solid game, it just wasn't for me, I think that's completely valid. And I think people misinterpret someone's subjective view of something as being some sort of seal of approval or disapproval of that thing in a vacuum. Like, this is a bad thing.
Right.
And while I am guilty as anybody of saying at times, oh my God, that game sucked, or, you know, that was crap, or that was great, or whatever, like it's an objective viewpoint, it always comes from my particular experience with it. And I'm always trying to remind myself to come at it from who I am, what I like, what experience I had with the game, the X number of hours I played with it, the things that I got to see in that game that other people maybe saw other things and they like, you know, it's always going to be as much about the reviewer's experience as anything else. And I think that's fine. I think especially with the internet and how many people's views you can get about something at this point.
Yeah, absolutely.
Complaining about somebody, you know, not getting it or whatever. I mean, you can have a legitimate argument about the quality of a product with somebody, but it's always going to be just as much about that person as it is about the product.
Right.
And
which is, you know, again, to your point, Garnett, I'd rather see people who are at least, you know, sort of enthusiastic about the genre review a game rather than, you know, like, I hate RTSs, but I'm going to review StarCraft 2, you know, here you go.
Yeah, because the argument always comes like, well, you know, I am a professional at my craft, Jeff. I mean, I've been doing this a long time. But I also know how to look at these
games. There's something valuable about somebody that doesn't like a genre. Because, you know, I've had games where I'm like, I'm really not going to like this. And it's like, oh my gosh, I did like that.
That happens a lot. But that's from more of an academic perspective, right? Like you want to know what the naysayers are saying if you're really into RPGs, you want to know what somebody else who's really into RPGs thinks about X game, and they'll, you know, odds are make allegories to, you know, other RPGs that they've played that you've maybe liked or didn't like, and you'll have a better informed opinion about it rather than, you know, a bunch.
The thing for me is that if you guys played Ace Combat?
No. Sure.
Not the new one, but
any of them.
Yeah, the most.
So you know, in Ace Combat, you like get different airplanes, and they have like different ratings for different abilities, defense, attack, ground, all that sort of stuff.
And they make other games that don't have that exact mechanic.
Here's what I wanted to say is that Ace Combat always shows that web thing where it shows you like the hexagon inside of it that shows you the weighting of how strong it is to each different thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, some airframes are super strong in one area and then weak in others. So as a gamer, I'm like the big dot in the middle because I'm into almost everything. I'm super into sports games. I love my Japanese role playing games. I will play a real time strategy all day long. You know, I love an adventure game. I play all sorts of games, and I think that the maybe if there's a downside to that is that I'm not the full spike on any of them. Well, so when I read a review, when I go to see a review, I want to read the review from the person who's the full spike.
Sometimes it's interesting to see a different perspective.
Yeah, but
too.
To me, it's not about the story most of the time. No matter what the genre of the game is, when I look at a review, the story and the graphics are completely separate to me than the mechanics.
Really?
Because to me, when I go to a review, I want to know what other people think of the mechanics and how the game plays. Because ultimately, this is a game, and you have to play it, and you have to do these mechanics over and over again. And I use Kingdoms of Amalur as an example, a game that I've been playing a lot.
You have been
lately.
So hooked on. I mean, I turn on my Xbox at night. It's like,
I know
she's single handedly trying to save that company.
Yeah, 38
they're
studios.
Saved.
I'm too counting late. For you.
Yeah, that's
true. No, they're
no
saved.
But,
yeah.
but my point is that
it's Andrea.
I really love the mechanics of that game.
Sorry,
and
hold
I
on.
Have
Jeff needs an answer. Epic bought them. Or Epic.
Oh,
them
right, right. Yeah, 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 yeah.
Yes.
Sorry. But yeah, the original. Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, like, for a game like that, to me, when I read a review, a lot of the knocks on that game had to do with the story of that game and people not getting the lore and not understanding where these people were going and the quest, the way the quests were set up and things like that. And to me, I really like that game because I think the mechanics are really solid. Same with Sleeping Dogs, like the way that the reason why I didn't like that game is because I didn't like the story. But the mechanics are solid. So when I go to judge a game...
Did she just contradict yourself?
I think
no,
she
no,
did.
No, 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 I didn't.
She's a woman. She could
what
do
I'm
that.
Saying is when I'm going to judge a game on its worth and its merit as being a good game,
yeah.
I always judge it on its mechanics versus its story because story is subjective.
Separate. Well, but mechanics are subjective. I mean, everything's subjective.
Well, sure, you can say that everything is subjective as it is. But
brother, this
me,
is why I. This is why ever since I have been in a place where I could set the editorial direction for reviews, I've been polarized with the way I do them because I'm not about breaking things down into mechanics and graphics and visuals. And there are a lot of people who want to see that stuff. I mean, that is why GameSpot and IGN and to a larger degree Metacritic mm-hmm. have become so powerful in the way that right. they relate because there are people who definitely want to methodically break those things down. It sounds like, and I'm not saying you're super methodical. I'm just saying though that there is a degree of you want to see the component parts of the game. And I actually think that a game's at its best when I don't see the component parts of it.
Right. But at the same time, both perspectives are looking for, you know, when you read a review, it's basically like, should I invest my money and time in this thing.
Right.
Sure.
And that's what we're talking about in the context when we look at reviews, right? That was like the base for our discussion right now is like when you look at a review, what do you want in a review or what do you
Well, what
like
do you want
for
a review? And so that's a great question because I actually don't want a buying guide.
No, I don't
want a buying guide either because I'm one of those people that when someone's like, when it comes to movies, if someone was like, oh, that sucks, you shouldn't go see it, I don't ultimately trust people's opinions yeah. at face value because movies in particular are very subjective. And I think games are too. It comes down to a number of factors. And while there's an argument to be made to not necessarily segregate gameplay mechanics from graphics and story, I think all of those play a really big role and they all need to be considered because they ultimately affect your experience playing the game.
I agree with you. Experience for me is
what it's really about.
Jeff, where do you think we are on the spectrum? Because I think that we both are very much about experience.
Yeah.
I would say that over the past 3 years or so, I have toned down a little bit on this. Well, it's just all about the experience angle because, you know, I appreciate that, you know, one of the things I think that I've sort of grown to appreciate is that there's a difference in medias. You know, there's something about reading a book that makes it reading a book. And so it needs to be a book to be a good book. And there's something about watching a television show that needs to be a television show to make a good television show. And so likewise, there's something about a game, and that includes me holding the controller and having a real degree of interaction with what's going on the screen for it to be a good game. There are interactions I might have through my game console that I bought as a game, and that's where it gets a little murky, right? But then they're not necessarily games. So to be a good game, I think that it has to be. For instance, my favorite game of all time, Eco, I think really embodies this because it's a fantastic sure. experience, but it's really fun to play.
Oh, and we can talk about it later, but as an Eco fan, you should really check out Papa Inyo.
I thought it was Papa Io.
Well,
Papa Io.
It is in the original Spanish, you know.
If you speak.
It's a Latin American developer.
Espanol. Yeah. It's Papa Io.
Well, of course I do. It's a romance language.
But anyway, we can come back to it, but that's very Eco-like.
I always view my job as, and I don't really intellectualize it this way, but I always view, if I had to put it into words, I would say that it's about trying to convey as best I can the experience that I had with a piece of media. And that experience is derived from who I am, where I was that day, what I've done all through my life. You know, it's about me as much as it's about the thing. And hopefully that gives some people an interesting viewpoint into my experience with that thing that they can relate to themselves in some way.
My new review scale then could be how many tissues?
I do cry a lot. I'm not going to argue.
Cry.
Oh, what are you talking about? Oh, yeah. Come on.
What?
But all right. So wait, it's interesting that we've been having this conversation because it speaks directly to what I was going to bring up about Darksiders 2, which is
how cute the cat is.
Goddamn, the cat is stealing focus all the time. We heard Andrea say earlier that she has ADD, and she's proving it. She's on her phone, petting the cat, looking around, taking pictures.
I'm not petting the cat.
I guess she told me. Anyway, so
she's stroking its fur.
Darksiders 2.
Stop it. Stop it.
Darksiders 2 is...
That's adorable. That is definitely an adorable picture.
Thank you. I was going to say, Jeff,
tell me about Darksiders
2. About Darksiders
2. So you guys blew my segue, by the way, because I was going to lead this up to the culmination and let you tell me what your definition of review was, and then I was going to ask you to give me that.
Well,
for Darksiders.
I think it's interesting that we talk about that because Darksiders 2, you know, is a mashup of all my favorite things.
Yes, it is. And that's why it's applicable.
Exactly my favorite game components in one game.
So why is that not working for some people but working so well for others?
Well, I can't speak to the first bit because it's working very well for me.
Okay, great.
It is... Here's where I can speak to the first bit a little bit. It is not as polished an experience as one would hope. It's not as polished an experience as, for example, Skyward Sword, which you can tell the care that's taken with Zelda games. You can tell that these guys don't put that game out until it is fucking done and polished and right, you know? And whatever your personal feelings about Skyward Sword, I think anybody could recognize that that game is just smooth around the edges. It is so... Everything is... All the puzzles are really, really clear, and there's no problems. And as much as I loved... I loved Darksiders, the first one. I love Darksiders 2. The fact that they added loot, which is one of my favorite things in games. They put loot into a Zelda game, which is awesome. It is this mashup of all my favorite things. It's got puzzle solving. It's got an awesome fighting mechanic. It's got an RPG-like leveling system where I get to decide where to put my skill points. It's got loot. It's got a big open world that I can explore. It's got awesome character designs and fantastic graphic and visual style. It is everything I love about video games, but it definitely it has a little bit of rough around the edges.
Well, as did the first game. Although I didn't finish the first game. I enjoyed my time with it, but this game out of the gate felt a little bit more polished to me.
Yeah, it still has camera issues.
Yeah.
It still has puzzles that there are a couple of times where I literally didn't know what was expected of me.
That's a carryover from the first game.
Exactly.
Though, which, yeah. You know, is...
Which you never find in a Zelda game.
True.
You always know... You may be stuck on a puzzle, but you always know what you're supposed to be thinking about.
Right.
You know? Right. And in this game, it's got this whole built-in mechanic. You got this character called Dust, which is this little bird that follows you around.
Mm-hmm.
That is, I found to be more confusing than helpful.
Well... So explain Dust to me, because I'm only a couple hours in and I'm like, oh, there's that freaking bird again.
Exactly.
Like, oh, there's that bird. Is that a checkpoint? Where am I going?
Confusing right away, because there's this glowing bird that also looks like certain collectibles that are in the game.
Well, and you get close to him and he stops glowing. And you're like, okay.
Or he'll fly away. Oh, and you're like, did I just get to a checkpoint? But it's not a checkpoint.
No.
And then if you depress the left stick, it's like in a lot of games, like, you know, Dead Space or whatever, where it'll show you your way.
Oh, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Well, you don't find that out for a few hours into the game.
Okay.
It doesn't give you the tooltip
about
that.
I'm still in the pretty linear part anyway.
Yeah. So. And the bird will fly, supposedly, to where you need to go. It is for what is ostensibly something there to be, to add clarity, to give you a direction when you're directionless, when you feel that you need help. This is the help button.
Right.
It is more confusing than anything
else. Well, he has 2 hours in. They didn't mention one word about follow the bird or
no. You get
that
a tool tip. You probably will get it very soon, but at a certain point. And I'm one of those people that will use that liberally in games just to be like, because I get turned around easy and stuff. Sure. And I just want to. And there was one sequence where using him fucked me, because
If I had just gone where it felt natural to go, I would have been fine. But there was a glitch in what he was supposed to do. So he kept flying back and forth, like into an entrance. And because there's every door in a dungeon has a little perch for him to sit on. Mm-hmm. And so if he goes and sits on that perch, it indicates that you're supposed to go through that door. So he would sit on the perch. I'd go through the door. He'd go through the door, and then I'd click in it again, and he'd go back out the door to the. So it was like I'm in this weird limbo between his two states of where I need to go. Like the map, you could get to where I needed to go either direction. So he was confused, which confused
his,
me.
His AI was bouncing between sides.
Yeah, that's, it was that's fucked up, and it's just a really poorly implemented feature, which could be very helpful in a game like this.
The feature,
like,
the idea is pretty cool, though. Right. Yes. I mean, that
to have a bird that's always around.
Instead of breadcrumb trail or
floor,
whatever. Yeah.
Giant blue chevrons.
Yeah, exactly. Like, way better than that.
So those little bits of the game are annoying and just show lack of polish. And I wonder if they'd just baked it a little longer, you know, those issues would be resolved. But the story is really interesting. For playing Death, it's not dark. It is a really interesting sort of, you know, broad fantasy, ridiculous
fantasy
story. Now,
you played Darksiders. Did you finish Darksiders?
Yeah.
Because evidently, this is one of those cases where, though you don't need to, finishing Darksiders 1 will definitely set you up to really get what's going on.
It's here. It's a cool narrative, I think.
And I like that.
There is a brilliant thing that they do, though, when you reload a save game, is they give you a...
Previously on,
you know, the last time you played...
We can't really tab that as brilliant anymore, because actually a lot of developers have clicked to doing that now. I mean, that's become something that if it's missing, I almost am like, why are you guys doing this?
They do it in a very competent way.
This is one of the cases, though, where I felt like I actually really needed it. Every time, because the game is, you know, you step away from this for a couple of days and you're like, oh, wait, okay, I'm in this huge area. Where am I going? You know,
I love the character designs too.
They're really good.
Oh, it's so there's big, chunky characters with interesting faces and these big, monolithic beasts.
Talked about this some. What is it do you think about Joe Mad's art here? Great comic book design, great comic book illustrator that has been successful. Compared to Todd McFarlane, also arguably a very successful comic book illustrator whose attempts to do video game art, to me, have fallen short of the mark.
I don't know. Joe Madera is a really interesting artist who you would think, looking at his 2D art, it wouldn't translate into three dimensions. Because it's highly stylized, it's very detailed. And so is Todd McFarlane's. You know, highly stylized, very detailed, a lot of lines. But for some reason, these artists have found a way to really translate into three dimensions that vision, and it's really cool. Like the characters are really big and thick, and have lots of stuff hanging off of them.
See, now you say that, but I think that part of the difference is that there's just a little bit of a quality of lightness to Joe Mad relative. Everything with Todd McFarlane is heavy-handed. Like everything is Teutonic and big and bold and heavy,
but Madeira's is so cartoony. He's very
maybe that's
unreal.
What it is. Maybe it's that he pulls a little bit of lightness from there, and so light doesn't necessarily mean light in weight. There's just something that gives me it lets me disconnect enough from where I'm not trying to take it the rest of the way to being photorealistic.
Yeah.
Whereas with a lot of times with McFarlane stuff, it's like I find that I'm looking at it and I'm like, oh, I just want to go ahead and extend it to make it like almost realistic.
And Darksiders 2 is like really, really, I mean, the color palette in that game is all over the place. Like, I mean, very bright for the most part, but like that, I think, is part of what makes it really engaging.
And you wouldn't think that from a game starring Death.
No, you wouldn't, but it's like everything's like, oh, cool, a new area. Like everything's really neat
to
look at.
Wait till they get the pestilence.
What did you think of... right. I think that's the female. I really do. What did you think of the loot system and upgrading your weapons?
I think that's great. It's sort of like very, very early on. It doesn't feel too overwhelming, but I'm sort of concerned about it feeling like, you know, yet another system to manage while I'm doing all this epic questing and stuff. I too am a fan of the concept of putting it in there. And if it keeps up, if it feels like as good as it
that's
does, you know,
I like that it's not like Diablo. It's not like copious amounts of loot constantly exploding from stuff.
No, this is occasionally like, oh, I killed this dude and he dropped a new pair of greaves I can use that happens to be better than what I'm wearing.
And so. Also, it's, you know how in Zelda, when you go to you find a chest, it'll have one of three things in it. It'll have the next item you
need.
That's
an airplane. Yes, it's a helicopter. You heard correctly.
You guys, I swear to God, it's the ADD couch over there. I swear to God.
What?
It'll either
bird.
Be... If you find a chest in a Zelda game, right, it's either a dungeon map, the next item that you need, mm-hmm. or a key. That's really mm-hmm. the only three things that are in chests.
And a musical sound. Yeah, musical. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, here, you still have dungeon maps. You still have the next thing you want. You still have keys. You still has that template in place. But they have the ability to throw all these extra chests in the world that you can find and hunt for that just have awesome loot in them.
Well, and it's... Changing from the first Darksiders, where you go into a chest and you're like, okay, more skulls, great, or whatever.
Right.
You know, this is like, you actually see a chest and you're like, okay, I may have enough skulls, I think, but I'm going to go over there because it might not be that. It might be like something else.
And you can buy, and the currency system is cool because you can sell the loot you don't need for money, which you can then buy to upgrade your move set.
Yeah, so but that seems like a less... I'm sorry to like interrupt you, but that seems like a very generic thing for an RPG. Hey, you guys can find cool loot in a chest, and guess what? You could sell your other stuff to upgrade your other stuff.
Well, but it's not really an RPG. I mean, it has RPG elements.
That's very standard.
It's Zelda. It's Metroid or Zelda is what the template is. So having loot in that kind of game, it really does feel like something new.
Because
it doesn't feel like an RPG. The combat system doesn't feel like Zelda either. It's a weird mashup of like God of War or something.
Right, right. By the way, that's one of the things I felt that they really did with this game is, you know, presentationally, it very much more has that epic sort of God of War feel. A lot of long shots, a lot of, you know, big, huge environments that, you get a little flyby, you know, before you go through and stuff. I think that's really cool.
And I don't know if you're far enough into this, but at a certain point you start getting epic items that have new properties as far as like adding fire attack or ice attack to your weapons.
I got some scythes that I can feed other weapons to that will beef them up and like give them extra properties and visual stuff. And
so that does feel like, seem like an RPG, but you have this like awesome God of War-esque combat system where you're learning new combo moves, you're learning new abilities that, you know, juggling people in the air. It's, you know, basically Dante from Devil May Cry.
Right.
But you're in dungeons solving puzzles. The puzzles are never really as crisp and well executed as a Zelda game, but they're close.
Right. Well, I guess the thing is none of these individual mechanics are like, oh my God, revolutionary, but in this sort of game, it feels like way fresher than just, you know, your average RPG.
Do you think that's because
RPG?
Of the setting and the story of the game? Or do you
think
it's
the mashup of all these. You have like the awesome traversal of something like a Prince of Persia. You have the awesome combat of something like a God of War. You have the awesome puzzle and structure of something like Zelda. You have the loot of something like Diablo. It's like all the things that I love most about different games.
So you love Darksiders too?
I do. Awesome. I really do. As much as I see its flaws, I see it for its flaws. I love the experience of playing it. is great. And it is so satisfying.
Jeff's PC version. Any upgrades? You think?
Just
playing on PC.
Well, yeah, and to sidetrack back to Sleeping Dogs real quick, that has a high resolution texture pack, which makes a definite difference. I saw a little bit of the Xbox 360. Yeah, so this was just. I mean, it looks gorgeous, but it feels like a high resolution console game sort of presentation. I mean, it's not,
that style of animation, I think you're not going to really up-res that much. Whereas in Sleeping Dogs, you have actual like facial recreations that look more like a human.
Yeah.
Whereas in Darksiders, like these are like cartoon characters essentially.
And I could be wrong, but I don't think Darksiders has nearly as many, you know, graphical options and tweaks and stuff as the menu.
You mean in the PC version?
Yes. Both, right. I played PC version for both. So yeah. So it looks gorgeous on PC, and I'm playing with a controller, so more or less.
A couple of really, really strong titles to kick our August off.
And, for sure, man.
Mm-hmm. And I'm also really curious, like these are the first, not the first, these are the first two coming back over the summer games to go into the review hopper and you know, probably come under a heavier critical eye than a lot of the digital stuff does. And that's what got me thinking about this. Again, that and the Last Story review. And I'm really curious to see how Darksiders fares. Obviously, expectations way higher for Darksiders here in the sequel after the first game was sort of a sleeper hit.
I was just going to say, I feel like the first one was under a lot of people's radar. I felt like I was one of those people that was like, how come you guys haven't played this to so many people?
And I still have it sitting there. I know. I still have it sitting there.
It is. The first one was excellent. And this one really is a very different game in a lot of ways, but is equally as awesome. I really think this franchise, I'm rooting for it because I want a third one and a fourth one to get
all four of Horsemen. Yeah. All right. Yeah. You smell that?
Is that pizza?
That is the pizza. Oh my God. All right, it is break time. We're going to take this little halftime break. When we come back on the other side, we will have the rest
the
of...
The cat is sleeping adorably.
We'll have the rest of The Cat is Sleeping Adorably.
His little eyes are closed.
Oh my God, his little eyes are closed. He's so cute. Jeff has turned into a 12-year-old girl.
It's a kitten. Guys, seriously.
Oh, for the love of God.
We can confirm. We'll be right back. May have thought you know what it's like to be all in with Week in Confirm, but this is just the tip of the show, and we have a lot more yet to come to lay you out with the rest of it, and it's coming up right now.
Did you get all of the entendre there? Because I think I did.
Guys, Andrea has had a bit to drink.
Hey, it's everyone right. Has, okay?
Yes. I'm
Don't
do
you
my
peg me.
Impersonation of Switzerland right now.
What?
Mattis is like, I plead the fifth.
I was just saying that we got like there's more girth to this still.
Oh, stop. Andrea literally said during the break
that
if we don't start, she will be gone by the fourth set. By the fourth,
I
segment.
Did say that. That's true. Yeah. I said if we don't continue here on we go. This recording,
let's talk about some new games.
Yes.
Yes.
Gamescom, which everybody wrote off.
You certainly did. I remember you saying it.
I totally
because you went last year, right?
No, I went two years ago, and it looked like it was going to be a huge show, and it seemed to tail off a little bit last year, and then Microsoft up and says we're not going. Nintendo says we're not going, and then Sony says, well, screw you guys, we're going to hit one out of the park, and yeah. goes
we're
going to
announce a bunch of games that nobody cares about.
Woo! Fuck you.
No, I mean
like just seriously, what do you mean no one?
Okay, I'm
really?
Sorry. I was
really?
Playing. Let's talk about him.
Oh, Andrea. Are you talking about the horror movie? Yeah, the teen horror game?
Of course I am. Is that not Rise of Nightmares all over again?
Did you play Rise of Nightmares?
I did.
I remember trying to play Rise of Nightmares and like putting my foot forward.
We did a segment on TRS of it.
That was such a broken idea. Such a broken idea.
Idea wasn't broken. The implementation, however, was.
So why do you think this idea is better?
So here we're talking about the game, and it's called Cabin in the Wood. Oh, wait, no, it's not. It's, hold on. It's, it's Until Dawn. Until Dawn.
He had this joke written down, by the way.
I did have a joke written down. I have to write it. That's the way it works.
Man, I really hope it's
good. This is not fucking improv.
I hope it's good.
Cabin in the Woods? It was excellent.
No, Until Dawn.
Until Dawn. It's not going to be good.
No, I know it's not, but I hope it is.
By the way, that is also exactly how long we party on.
We party to the dawn.
Anyway. Are you quoting Nicki Minaj?
Probably.
So, Until Dawn announced it's a move game. It is patterned by their own admission. I mean, this is, they said it's a teen horror movie, which... By the way, if someone says teen horror, you should immediately run away, right?
I guess.
Well, you think like Scream or Halloween.
I don't know what to think. Scream or Twilight or some god awful bastardization
movie.
Of the
it's a
two.
Slasher kind of dealy bopper, right?
Yeah, dealy bopper.
Yeah,
Yeah, there's some sort of
what's the primary mechanic of this game going
to
be?
Evidently, you use the move to unzip a girl's vest parka
thing. I like it.
And like get her down to her bra and panties, and then shit happens and people get bloody. Well, not that way. It's not like a first experience. It's not like a first experience.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. There we went there. Sorry about that.
Right, enough apologies. Yeah. All right. So what else was announced?
I told you, man. It's like Weekend Confirm's first time.
What else was announced at Gamescom? What the shit was that noise?
Oh, man. I think it was the sound of a cherry pop.
So look, here's the question. No, that's...
It's not that bad.
We need to separate these two, Jeff.
Yeah.
Is this the game that will get you to put your move back out, you know, get your camera and put it in front of your television, your PS3? So should we write off motion control for serious games just in general?
I mean, it looks
like no one can really do it seriously.
Okay, listen, the only games that have successfully used motion control in a serious way are on the PlayStation 3 and are games like Killzone 3, where you can actually use the PlayStation Move in multiplayer, and it actually is a really more advanced way of aligning your shots and shooting if you know how to use it. I've talked to a couple different people who said that they really felt like, I see that look in your face. You're going to say something soon.
I'm not.
Well, are you going to talk about using the sharpshooters?
No, I'm not talking about using the stupid peripheral. No,
I think the sharpshooter is quite good.
Well, if you learn how to use it, what I'm saying is people that I've talked to that play multiplayer that have actually learned how to use the move controllers say that it's much more accurate and you get a better actually kill-to-death ratio because you have better accuracy with the move than doing it the same move with the controller.
But you really? That's turning it into a light gun. Okay, hold on a second. Basically, right? I mean, like, you move around and stuff, but it's that extra peripheral, that gun peripheral that you plug the move into. And
see, now for me,
you don't have to plug it in.
For me, I actually find that playing with a sharpshooter is not more accurate, but I find it fun because playing with the sharpshooter is a fun experience because I have this thing in my hands and it, like, I like that the way they built the thing feels like you have an assault rifle, and it is kind of fun. Like almost, I realize that it, you know, teeters on the edge of cosplay, and I'm fine with that. I enjoy it. I think it's kind of fun.
I don't think it teeters on the edge of cosplay at all.
Grunson's living room with his ghillie suit.
You don't think so?
Like puts his outfit on.
Really, like
standing
in front of the television with a fake assault rifle playing a video game. I mean, that's the same. That's the fantasy of all light gun games.
Well, it depends what you're wearing, I guess, when you're playing. But my point was
Hello
like,
Kitty boxers.
Well, that's okay. I'm going to let that go.
What I'm saying is that like that's the fantasy of all of us. Like that's the fantasy of every light gun game.
Hello Kitty boxers?
No, is you have a gun in your hand and you're like in the moment, and it's part of capturing a bigger experience than just what's in the screen.
Sure.
It transfers what's in the screen to what's outside the screen and the way you're interacting
with it.
But I can't imagine that being... Yeah, and I'm saying that can't, to me, so far hold up to a controller or especially a mouse and keyboard.
Well, I think that it is all about how much time you put into learning the mechanics of that, right?
Yeah.
So I feel like the people that I've talked to about it have taken the time to really learn how to be precise with the move controller. And they've found when they play in online multiplayer matches that... they are able to just like wipe out their competition because of the move controllers, the way that the lock-on mechanisms work with the move.
So you just added lock-on mechanisms.
Well, I mean, okay, please don't take me word for word here. And I say that because I...
Don't listen to what I'm saying.
Listen to what I mean, not what I say.
Oh my God.
Guys, I think we're getting sidetracked. The more salient point that I think you're trying to get to, Garnett, is... that we've gotten to the point where if you announce a game and it has movement controls, it is immediately ghettoized.
Sure.
Yes, for lack of a better term. Agreed.
So here's a game that has things that when we see in a movie, we enjoy. It's got a bunch of people going off into the cabin in the woods. It has like the silly like fog and them going to this crate cabin. And then all of a sudden, you know, of course, it's super formulaic. It's the exact sort of formula, though, that we've enjoyed in a fun, lighthearted way in movies. And we see it here in a game, and a lot of us just go, really? And then we make fun of it. We poke fun at the move thing,
right? Is it possible to have it? Have we gone past the point where movement control in a game is anything other than
a gimmick cause for scorn and ridicule?
No, I don't think so. I don't think we have. I think it all depends on who the user is and what they're trying to get out of that experience. For example, Sony made a really big deal at their E3 press conference of showcasing these new kind of these magic book experiences. What's the actual name of them?
Wonder Book?
Wonder Books. Yeah.
Ironically, they didn't show it at GDC. I mean, at Gamescom.
And I think that particular technology is really amazing and really fascinating. And for the audience that they're going for, that's going to be a really fantastic, you know, revenue opportunity for them to sell a lot of units doing all these different experiences with the book. Because as a kid, if I had that as a kid, I'd be like, oh my fucking God, this is amazing.
Yeah, hold on a second.
You know what I mean? So I'm saying like those kind of, the technology is there and it's useful for certain audiences, but other audiences, it's maybe more of a gimmick and maybe more of like an added value. And there's a lot of games that I feel like add that motion technology just as like, oh, well, we have the hardware. We should do something with it. And Mass Effect 3 is a perfect example on how they added these Kinect features, but how many of us actually used those Kinect features?
I like the voice
control.
The reason I love having you on the show is that you're a gamer and you play games, and you just cited to me a reason for having a Move as revenue opportunities. I can't believe you just told me that, because that's not something you're excited about, is it? Are you really excited about the book thing?
No, I'm definitely not. But
all right, so
no, but I'm not their audience, right?
You're not.
It's all about they're tailoring their specific content to who their demographic is. I mean, that's the way we get all of our products, whether it be
so. Come back to Until Dawn
or a TV show or clothing.
Whether or not they can do that, you know, and obviously on Kinect, we had Sesame Street stuff that Tim Schafer's group worked on. Excellent, excellent ability to connect with younger audience. I get that. What I'm saying is, have we reached a point, I think as Jeff articulated, have we reached a point where Move and Kinect and any sort of physical interaction with games just isn't at a sophistication level right now where it's anything other than awkward and gimmicky?
You know what it is?
It's always been a gimmick. And here's the thing. When motion control specifically, where you actually have a Move or a Wiimote or whatever in your hand,
yeah,
it's all about economy of motion when you're playing games, right? How do I do the most stuff with expending the least amount of energy? And that's how modern controller design came about, right? You've got everything in the palm of your hand. You can basically move everything around. As soon as you move that into an environment where you have a physical thing where you're waving or, you know, you're actually doing physical motions, that economy of motion goes out the window, and it takes a lot more effort to do the same exact things that you can do with a controller in your hand, which I think is why a lot of core gamers are just like, well, yeah, it's you know, well, it may be fun for a minute, but it's kind of a
gimmick. Depends on the technology, though. Like, I just had the luxury of seeing the new demo for Dance Central 3, which I can't talk to you about details because I'm under embargo, but like the new stuff that they're doing for that game with the Kinect is something that you cannot do with a controller. Like, there's new things that they have announced that they've never done before with that
But
series.
How many dancing games? I mean,
they're doing something that no dancing game has really done before. And it's something that, like, that's a perfect example of a game that you have to do, and you have to do the complete full motion of it to really enjoy the experience of it. And I think that there's a benefit to that. And some people really love and crave that experience.
So I agree with you. I think that a dance game is a great implementation of that technology. I think, unfortunately, the position that I've gotten to with this stuff is that it is actually more distancing, more abstracting in most iterations than it would be using a controller. And the reason for that is I think we all got sort of persuaded that this was an exciting, fun concept when the original Wii was announced. And tennis and bowling are uniquely suited for this technology, and it is because
dancing uniquely suited to
because
the Kinect controller.
The motion that is required is perfect for the controller. What is happening is something is being projected towards you on a screen.
Yep.
You can suspend your disbelief and pretend that you are propelling that thing back out toward the screen. And in bowling, it's just a one-way street, but it's still the same thing. I'm propelling something out into the screen. There doesn't need to be a representation of you. You don't have to be watching your avatar on screen to get
whether your motion is being translated the way you want it to.
So clearly what Move needed was an Olympic event with like the people,
well,
the
problem
the streamers
is,
that come off their hands where they dance around the mats. That is, it's a Move control streamer
game. The rhythmic
game.
Gymnastics. The problem is what we all want out of these kinds of experiences is something that just doesn't work against a two-dimensional projected image.
Do you remember the EA fighting game? We had Move controllers in your hand.
Like the Fight Club style.
It was called Fight or something like that.
Yeah.
It was such a disaster.
Right. And the problem, because the problem with all these games, even the hardcore game implementations of movement, is that I'm doing something physically, and then I'm trying to watch the screen to see if my guy is doing what I want him to be doing.
And what sort of response he's getting from the virtual
character.
It's a mess.
What we need to have, in order for this to make any sense whatsoever that isn't tennis or bowling, is something where what I'm only paying attention to what I'm physically manipulating as I would be in real life, and that is interpreted in the game without me having to be the intermediary between my movement and its interpretation.
Totally agree. I would even go one further and say that, you know, movement, even in bowling and tennis, the games that would seem to be tailor-made for movement are problematic in that you're not actually swinging a tennis racket. It's the same. I have a buddy who strapped a actual golf club to his Wiimote to play Tiger Woods because when you swing that thing, there's no weight.
Right.
There's no, you end up throwing your shoulder out or you end up doing all this crap that like, it doesn't, as much as it would seem, you're making the actual motion the same way. You're not feeling the...
That's why sword fighting doesn't work.
I think you guys are splitting hairs here. I mean, you're trying to make it one-to-one, and now I admit that Sony has taken a step further and has made it a lot more technologically sound in that aspect if you were to strap a golf controller to your arm.
I won't argue that. I will not argue the fidelity
of the move. They've done a lot of really amazing things. I mean, obviously Nintendo was first, so they didn't quite get all the one-to-one aspect of it. Mm-hmm. I mean, you couldn't have tricks in the Wii Sports and be really great, but
even with Motion Plus, it was like, you know, you swing the Wiimote and you're going to swing that thing a lot harder than you would if you had an actual golf club in your hand because you are not feeling that weight. You're not actually moving your, you know, and it's like pretending to throw a baseball when you don't actually have a baseball in your hand. You can throw
I think it's more abstracted. It's more abstracted when you're doing – it's like the uncanny valley of movement because when you're close to doing what you want and yet none of the sensation and none of the output is based on the actual – thing that you're doing,
dancing being the one exception.
Dancing being the exception because there's no you are just doing it.
Yeah,
and I think that's where this technology is awesome, is the stuff where you're just doing it. But that's why sword fighting, for example, doesn't work because you end up just flailing around because it's more abstract than just pushing a button. Pushing a button is the most intuitive thing because it's one thing
that
translates into something.
What you just said is, I think, the crux of the matter for me, and I've made this argument many, many times, which is that motion control and all of these seem to be an answer for a question that I'm not sure was the right question to ask in the first place, which was, why do people have such a problem with controllers? And maybe it's not that they had such a problem with controllers. Maybe it's that different games appeal to different people, and there's different sorts of games that we were making that, frankly, might never be appealing to a broad stream audience. However, there are games that might be. For instance...
Zumba Fitness?
The Walking Dead was actually what I was going to bring up.
You guys might laugh, but like a game like that is hugely popular.
So I was thinking more along narrative
and
game tuned, drive,
and it's attuned to motion control.
Okay. But I think from my perspective, all of this is trying to get to the fucking holodeck. That's where we all dream about, and I want to just do the thing. And have the thing be awesome. I want to do something I can't do in real life.
See, I think from our end, that is obviously the ultimate goal. I think on the, you know, development side, it's a little more cynical than that. It's like, what do we do to differentiate ourselves and sell more consoles? And then somebody has a waggle.
The only problem is when they invent the holodeck, we all know what they're going to do with it first.
Make porn.
Shopping.
Shopping. Yes.
Virtual.
So.
Malls.
Until Dawn.
No, you know I was right. Go ahead. Gloss over it.
What do you think I was hinting at? It's way better when I was hinting at it. Until Dawn, it'll be very interesting to see what happens with reception. I'm not convinced that...
adorable kitties being adorable.
I'm not convinced that with a Move controller you can do something. There was like some commentary about it being tongue-in-cheek. I don't know that necessarily it's intended to be tongue-in-cheek. I don't think that when you have some of the bloody scenes that they showed in their trailer that it's necessarily just tongue-in-cheek. Yeah. But how about some of the other stuff they showed?
Yeah.
They showed Rain, which immediately jumped off the screen at me. This is a PSN exclusive title. It is a...
Heavy Rain lost some weight.
Jason! Now what happened to Jason? He turned invisible and you can only see him in the rain. Actually, Rain is really cool because that is the catch, is that there's a boy who can only be seen by seeing the water running off of his form in the rain. So it introduces this whole dynamic. Some people have compared it to Linger in Shadows. Yes?
Continue.
I think she... I was just thinking the kid's going to be fucked in summer.
Oh, yeah. But
especially around California. He's like, fuck, man. It's just dry.
I'm just invisible.
Granted, they didn't show a tremendous amount of it, but I thought what was really great about this was that it conveyed the atmosphere they're going for. It conveyed something that's new and yet understandable at the same time. You know how to interact with an adventure game. You know the sort. You immediately sort of click to the sorts of puzzles they're going to throw at you. And yet at the same time, you sense that there's a different dynamic here. There's something different to play with, which is great. I mean, that's like the perfect, to me, balance of something that is understandable and familiar enough I can play it, and at the same time giving me something that's a new creative twist on it. And I think it really takes great advantage of the technology. This isn't something you could have done on a prior generation of hardware, because the way it depends on water as rain flowing over a invisible body, I mean, that's a really cool looking effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's a really neat looking game for sure.
Andrea's totally mesmerized by
She's
the cat.
She's ADDing on the cat. Although it is pretty freaking cute what's happening right now. The cat is loving you so
he
much.
He is. This is true.
All right. So what about Puppeteer then? Rain, I think you guys should definitely be excited about Rain. I think that we'll see. But by the way, both of these two games that we're talking about for PlayStation are Sony Japan Studios.
Yeah.
And it is to me, and I said this in the Daily Show today, this is exactly why we should be hoping for a really vibrant development community in Japan, because it's an artistic... He's like the Ryan's going by with the
ring card.
The ring girl. Exactly.
You know, there's a ton of creativity and a different sort of vibe out of Japan. I mean, look, the culture is different. The art is different. Everything we see is different. And there's a unique spirit that comes through those games that, God damn it, if we don't have it, we will be stuck playing hours and hours of Call of Duty and World of Warcraft, and then having and for some reason, like, look, we've got a vibrant indie community in the West, but we for some reason don't seem to have the ability to take those indie titles and convert them into a puppeteer. Isn't that weird?
It is weird.
I mean,
show me a AAA tier Western published game that is purely driven by its artistic front.
A AAA. It has to be AAA.
That would be that would be put in front of everyone in a global conference as a platform publisher's star game.
Journey is a good example. Would you call that AAA?
Yeah.
Yeah, Journey is definitely up there. I would put Journey in the class with Rain. Obviously, it's a PSN game. It's something that they did get behind. Although
Beyond.
I think that Journey could have... Beyond is a great example.
Yeah.
But that's not America. Okay, so West, I guess, was a little... I was being a little...
You mean it
I
has was to be American?
I was being a little bit American-centric. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I apologize. I was.
No, but you make a good point, and I think you can probably find... You know, a title here or there, but your point is that it's not a trend.
I am trending. I'm totally talking big. There are exceptions to every rule. Clearly, I'm not saying that this is the be all and end all, but I'm saying that in general, look, hey, Sony Japan Studios at Gamescom had two hero games, Rain and Puppeteer. They look awesome. They look really creative. Yeah. They got me so. Like, I am so on a gaming high this week after seeing those two games. You know, that and Remember Me, which, fuck me, I am so excited for Remember Me.
Yeah.
That game just
It's cool that they used this conference to showcase those kinds of games, too, you know?
Well, it was a better showing than E3 for them, I think.
for Sony?
Well, I haven't really had a pretty damn good showing.
Beyond Two Souls.
No, I mean just in terms of the stuff that I'm personally interested in. Yeah. Like
Sony kicked so much ass at Gamescom. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Now, do you think that will reinstate Gamescom as sort of a destination?
I don't know.
No,
not if Microsoft and Nintendo don't. So here's the thing.
Are they ready to just concede that news cycle to them?
But by doing that, they sort of won for them. Because, look, Microsoft has nothing in the barrel to, you know, load up and take these guys on. Sony had great stuff. Yeah. They won it outright. And at the same time, it's Microsoft can just say, well, we didn't go. We didn't go.
Right.
We weren't there.
Well, that's...
But they don't necessarily need to go.
Not with a Halo 4, provided Halo 4 comes through. But, yeah.
No, I think that a lot of the reason they didn't
But look at what else they... I mean, look at what... Like, Sony was so strong at this. So, Puppeteer, which, by the way, looks fantastic. Puppeteer is a 2D, obviously old-school platformer where you play a boy who is trying to regain his humanity. He's been turned into a puppet, and it very much has the...
I'm a real boy.
It looks like that Grasshopper game, Black Knight. Andrea, what are you laughing at?
Oh, I was just... Never mind.
You're laughing at... Did Ryan pass out? He's gone.
Is Ryan passed out over there?
Ryan's passed
Someone
out.
Go check his pulse.
All right. Somebody get the Sharpie.
So you have Grasshopper, who unveiled their 2D puppeteering game, mm-hmm. Black Knight, at TGS last year. But now you're coming up on this. You look really great 3D in a 2D world here. Fantastic use of light. Great shadow effect. A cool dynamic in that you're obviously in a puppet theater, but they're using scissors. So that makes a lot of sense, cutting the strings, cutting into the environment. I think there's a lot of cool stuff. I'm just saying that there was a lot of cool creative energy around those two games.
Definitely.
That really got me excited.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just love that. I mean, I did not expect Gamescom to come through.
I didn't either.
Sort of surprises, and it really did.
And did you expect the other announcement? So if you're a Vita owner, you've got to be excited about Crossbuy.
Hmm.
So this
That was an amazing announcement. I mean, I almost feel like with the kind of slump that Vita has been in, that they needed something like that to reinvent their brand.
Oh, they had to have this.
Yeah.
I think they had to have this.
Okay, that's fair.
So All-Stars, Sly 4, and Ratchet & Clank, if you buy the PS3 version, you get the Vita game. Suddenly the Vita becomes a very, very viable thing to have.
It's what we all wanted.
You're like, oh, shit, no, well, like, I kind of want this now.
Yeah.
And that's what they needed.
I think they heard that, you know, and it's...
Now, do you think it sells more systems or more so than it play or excites the people that already have one where they're like, oh, cool.
I think it sells more systems. I think the people who bought one already bought into Vita. I think the people who bought one already bought into the power of the hardware.
Who haven't returned it yet.
Aww.
The cool thing.
And I think that this is the deal. This is the holy grail. This is the promise of a
PlayStation Portable.
Right.
It is the system that is plugged into your television. When you walk away from it, you can take the game you've been playing with you.
Exactly.
That's pretty fucking exciting.
And add to that cross-controller. So they also unveiled plans for their next firmware update, which is coming in this month, later this mm-hmm. month, has cross-controller compatibility. So you'll finally be able to do Vita as a controller for your PS3.
Which is an answer to the Wii U, obviously.
Oh, yep, and
absolutely,
and,
yeah.
And think about the functionality of the Vita. You've got great gyroscopic controller. Yep. You've got front and rear touch screen. You've got a second screen on this thing. There are so many things that you can do with this that
will
that,
we but, see but that? That's the question.
But it also suffers from that same problem that the Wii tablet's going to have, which is, you know, developers are making multi-platform games. How much time are they going to invest in resources that are they going to invest in making content specific to that little thing, you know? But, man, Cat's going off.
I know. He's distracting.
And Vita finally getting PlayStation 1 classics. And that seems to me to be a little late in the game.
Yeah.
I think that part
Not
of
too
Vita,
exciting to me, but...
Part of Vita is still like, it's still a package that's coming together. So now, back to that thing we talked about earlier on, they've got Modern Warfare, Black Ops coming for Vita, although it doesn't look all that great. It's a really important piece of the puzzle. Yeah. They've got buy a PS3 game, get the Vita version. And suddenly that hardware, I think, is a much more vibrant platform than it was before last these week. Announcements.
Yeah.
And that's a really good thing for them.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. So what do you guys think of Remember Me? Capcom picked this game up. It was shown at Gamescom last year. Very cool idea. It's a future Paris where you play as a memory jacker. I love this. The idea is that you play as a character who's able to rewrite the dreams and memories of the people that she comes in contact with. But the catch is, she doesn't know who she is because she's been rewritten.
What?
Inception. What?
I know.
Yeah. I was thinking more Men in Black, but you know.
Oh, yeah. Well,
yeah. So already been under development for a while, and
I think it looks awesome.
Did you see the gameplay video?
Yeah.
I really like it.
Yeah,
I love this duality of I'm playing a game that feels like an Assassin's Creed game or a Batman game where I'm or even for that matter Uncharted where I'm clambering around buildings and making jumps and an adventure game. But then when I beam into someone's memories, it becomes this entirely different game where I'm manipulating things in the environment almost like an adventure game,
right?
Trying to get the outcome from their modified dream that I need to achieve success. That's really cool.
Now, I didn't see the trailer. This is one of the few that I didn't see, but it sounds a hell of a lot like Psychonauts.
Party foul.
No. It was empty.
I'm like dropping balls.
Yeah. Like going into somebody's mind.
So Psychonauts, you went in and remember those were still adventure.
Yeah, it's a
Psychonauts was cool because it still had adventure worlds in there.
Right. And it was always sort of in a weird abstracted psychedelic world,
right? Based on the person's psychology.
Yeah, and each one was different from the last, but it was still this sort of cartoon aesthetic that.
Yeah,
and this is interesting because you're in this sort of realistic looking place, then go into the dreams and memories, and
that sounds really
cool. So, Jeff, what happens is when you zap into someone's memories, you're able to manipulate objects inside their memories.
Okay,
and then what? Keep in mind that now. The idea is that I rewind your memory. Suddenly, you've not experienced what's happening here right now, and I change something so that you can't do what you did before, and like, something different happens.
Like, actually, what happened is that you actually dropped a bottle. Like, it didn't actually happen in our timeline, but in a different timeline, you dropped a bottle back then, and Garnet made that happen.
And because you dropped the bottle, you tripped over it. And because you tripped over it, you landed in front of a lead pipe, and you picked up the lead pipe. It's like, so it's establishing a whole new chain of events based off of changing little things inside the environment.
That sounds really cool. Really high concept. I hope it's as cool as it sounds.
I hope so. I like this whole idea of jumping into memories and I think it's a clever idea. The only concern I have is that obviously games have really fallen into this sort of cyberpunk world thing a lot, and there's probably a finite amount of cyberpunk sci-fi games I want to play, but I haven't reached it yet.
I won't be done until CD Projekt gets done with theirs, but
yeah, right?
That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited to see that. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so hopefully you're excited to stick around for the final segment here. I think we have things under control now.
You say that now.
Andrea, are you gonna stay upright?
But
vertical?
Oh, I'm good. Yeah.
I say that now. Right. Oh, I'm good. I'm good. She's all good. All right, we will come right back. We'll talk about Lost Odyssey and any loose ends that these guys want to catch up on. Stick around. We can confirm. We'll be right back.
Died at the end.
I know.
There.
Pac-Man died,
yeah.
Or something.
Keeping it real, bringing it back for the last segment of this August weekend confirmed summer party jam.
What?
Hey, I promised I would talk about Lost Odyssey, so you guys are going to zone out. Actually, Jeff Gannon's not because he's going to give me shit for not having played it when it originally came out.
Yeah, I was a cheerleader for that game when it first came out.
So I'm trying to figure out how it is exactly that I fell off the cliff in 2008. Yeah. When this game came out, which was 4 freaking years ago, for what I like, why did I not play this game?
I wish we could go back to the tape, because I bet there's tape of you on some show explaining why you didn't want to play it.
I remember playing it, and I got into it for a little while, and I would say this. What's interesting about this game to me is that it illustrates how difficult it is to put together a game of the scope that we want a Final Fantasy-like Japanese role-playing game to be. Because this game comes up short in places. Now, really? I'm about to tell you that it is, to me, this generation's, at least that I've played, best Japanese role-playing game, best story-driven character, best, like, I love the fantasy of it. I love the battle system. The battle system has innovation while still working within a lot of established ideas. But there's a lot of things that are missing here. For one thing, it was clear throughout this game that they were really struggling with the Unreal Engine. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, it was a early on game for Xbox 360, and the animations aren't there, and the whole, just the general degree of polish on the game is not at the level that we saw of PS2 era Final Fantasy X, or even PS1 Final Fantasy 7 and 8.
I think maybe like the copious amounts of poetry and texts.
The poetry is actually cool. The poetry is done. I think I like it.
It misses the mark a
little bit. The pacing doesn't go very well. I think this game has a pacing flaw. And that's what are you marking?
She's ADD, dude. We've established that. Great, she's has to be have her attention constantly. Shiny, shiny, shiny thing.
Exactly. Sorry.
I'm marking.
You lost me at poetry. I was like, what? Okay.
So one of the hooks of this game is that Kaim, the character, is one of several immortals, and he has witnessed a number of events over the course of his life, and you recall them as dreams, and they're written. They're beautiful. They're so cool.
Yeah, it's just jarring. Go ahead.
I never finished Lost Odyssey, but what I played of it, I liked back when it came out. I would posit that what drew you into it more is that it's one of the rare JRPGs that does not focus around some prepubescent emo kid. I mean, this is an emo
androgynous
adult.
Androgynous is the word I think you're looking for.
Yeah. But I mean, exactly. So the storyline is more mature.
It does have you do participate in a funeral. And you have to do actions of a funeral.
Maybe emo wasn't the right
thing. That's kind of weird.
But
and it has a really ridiculous character named Jansen who is obviously
the comic relief. And
people divide so you don't like him. I don't like him either, but people love Jansen.
It's clunky.
Ariel loves Jansen. And I'm like, Jansen's a fucking annoyance.
It's one of those things where you get a little Stockholm syndrome and you sort of end up loving him as you play. Because like,
you're stuck with him, all right.
The commitment to how ridiculous he is admirable at a certain point. But I love the way that
You're my queen.
I love the way the story is told and how it keeps pairing people up in interesting pairs so that you get interesting characters butting up against one another, you know? I think that's really fun. And
to speak to the issue that I was coming to though about the size of teams, and this is the pertinent piece about what it's like in a current generation, much less what it'll be like in the next gen level. One of the things I'm encountering here that's annoying is that the random battles that come up too frequently are the same cookie-cutter encounters all the time. So it's one thing to have random encounters popping up all the time. It's another thing that every time a random encounter comes up, it's the same two backline enemies with the same mix of two of this and one of this in the front line. And when that happens over and over and over, you realize that this is a production issue. This is a problem of there simply weren't enough people on the team to generate enough different monster types to populate the populate the tables so that when a random battle occurred, it could draw something other than this limited palette that it had. And that's unfortunate because the battle system in this game is really good.
I agree.
It's really good. It is an old school turn-based battle system combined with a sort of, you know, it's the same system we saw in Legend of Dragoon where you have an on-screen cursor that responds to you understanding the timing of your attacks.
Yeah.
It's really cool. It's really well done. Super deep because then that system ties back into the character development system. So here's where this game is very dense when it comes to developing your characters, their skills and abilities. And then there's this other system called the ring system. And so you have your immortals who are able to absorb abilities both through items they equip and through mortals that have abilities with whom they're partnered during combat. You draw all these things up and you're constantly rearranging what you're wearing and who you're partnering with to develop different skills and then using different combinations of those based on the situation. Yeah. And that is what makes it a really good combat system.
Yeah,
it's always challenging you to figure out what to do in each situation and use it appropriately. And that's cool, coupled with a great great high fantasy world and an admittedly a bit cliched story of, you know, one immortal turned wrong against his brethren. And I'm in the third disc, super enjoying it. And if you have not played Lost Odyssey, I could not more highly recommend it, with the caveat that in today's modern context, you'll recognize some of those flaws of it being a 2008 game. And the content, I think, stands above that.
I liked it a lot, and I didn't finish it, and I'll tell you why. I think the game plays at a certain pace that where you basically are doing enough moving through the game to continue progressing until you hit this massive roadblock where it's like you can't. If you have just been continuing to move forward, you literally cannot get past a certain point. Very in the very last third of the game, very tail end of the game, you have to have grinded and built up your characters to a certain point, or you're not getting past this point. And I just don't think that's acceptable anymore in modern game design. I just don't think, like, if I'm just continuing to move forward and I'm excited about your story, I'm excited about your game world, I'm excited about your mechanic, I want to keep playing, you're going to punish me for not having just dilly-dallied in certain areas. I mean, I wasn't skipping quests or anything like that. I just wasn't grinding enemies.
Yeah.
And you literally can't get past a certain point.
I mean, this is a game that straight up has problems with pacing at times, where you'll go from 3 or 4 save points right in a row to a 2-hour stretch with no save point.
Yeah.
It's just where its design sensibility is. And I attribute that, again, to how big of a group you need to pull off a Final Fantasy 12 or a Final Fantasy 13 or a 10. To have enough characters and art developed, to have enough time to go through every scenario and pound on it over and over and over and over and get the pacing right.
Totally agree, but I would, on that same token, you're making a 3-disc game and you get to that point.
Four-disc
game. You're like, okay, well, maybe we should, because to Jeff's point about grinding, I've run into a couple JRPGs that I stopped playing for that reason. And I think it's because it's there's this design ethos that basically, you want to have your game be a certain length, and it's almost like they've completed the game design and then they are basically adjusting a spreadsheet where it's like, okay, we need the player to spend 6 hours in this area or 3 hours or whatever it is. So we're going to, bump up. Okay. They have to be at least level whatever before they
fight. I think there are games that do fall prey to that. I'm not going to say that this game does. I think this game does have a very well done. This is, I think, to many people, the sequel to Final Fantasy that they wanted in the next generation. Once you get it to where the world opens up, you have the overworld, you have a way to traverse the overworld, you have an overarching story, and I'm not getting a sense that they're padding so much as I get a sense that there just are rough patches that needed more time to be developed.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, so I think that Lost Odyssey is a great game to go back to. And hopefully not the Lost Odyssey of its craft. Maybe we'll see some future endeavors along those lines that will improve upon, follow it. I'm really looking forward to playing Last Story. I mean, I'm bombing through Lost Odyssey, which is Mistwalker as well. And when I get to the end of it, I think I'll take a little break before going right into Last Story. But I'm really looking forward to playing Last Story.
I'm curious to see what you think of it, because that might pull me in too.
All right, so what else you guys been up to?
Well, I played some Papo and Yo. Nice.
That's Papo Eo.
Oh, yes.
Papo Eo.
Papo Eo, or in the United States, Papo and Yo.
So you have an alcoholic dad. You want to tell me about it?
Yeah. Well, okay. So the thing that's so effective about this game is the way that it deals with the thematic issue. So, yes, it's got this thematic underpinning of child abuse and stuff. But the way that they make the player feel that way. So you play as this little kid. And there's some foreshadowing as to, yes, there's this monster in the world. And it even starts, I think, in the real world, where you see, you're hiding in the closet and the shadow goes by and it's your dad and he's obviously, drunk or whatever. But anyway, you get into this fantasy world and the father is obviously represented by this monster. But the monster starts off as this sort of pink, hulking brute that's kind of, it's not very scary looking particularly, but you know, it's kind of intimidating and menacing. And you actually start off by solving a bunch of puzzles in the game with this creature. So, you know, use its if it's sleeping, you can use its belly as a trampoline to get to a higher area, or you know, cool stuff like that. Or you're collecting coconuts in the world to like lure it around because it likes to eat coconuts for some reason. Then you get to a, to an instance, and you know, I won't ruin it, but you basically certain things in the environment will trigger the monster to turn into this huge fiery beast, which you then have to run away from. So it basically lulls the player into this sort of playful sense of security, and then you're like, holy shit, I got to run away, and it changes the relationship with these two core characters like on a dime. And that's very representative, I think, of this, you know, alcoholic father or drug-abusing father theme that they're going with.
That's a really crazy dichotomy.
Yeah, it's really kind of... It doesn't hit you over the head with it. I mean, it's not trying to hide what the theme is. I mean, it's pretty obvious about what it's trying to say. But at the same time, it's not like sort of, you know, just, okay, I get it. Don't beat me over the head with it. It's like, oh, wow, you're feeling this. And then you think back and you go, oh, that's what they're doing. They're putting me in a position of, you know, somebody who is in a relationship with this, you know, with someone that's supposed to care about you. And then they... You know,
and yet it's not this abused, horrible, oppressive, dark sort of thing. It's very much a fantastical adventure at the same time.
Right. Now, I get the sense, like I said, an hour and 20 minutes in, but I get the sense that it's taking place, a lot of it is taking place in the kid's main character's mind,
mm-hmm.
While he's maybe cowering in the closet from his actual father. So there is this sort of like dark undercurrent to what you're going through, but the actual world that you're exploring, you know, it's, you know, Latin American developed and set.
You're in a favela.
Yeah, in a favela. And some of the puzzle mechanics are really cool. Like you pick up, you know, these blocks that are basically tied to actual favela buildings. So when you pick up the block and move it around, you see these actual buildings picking up and moving across the screen. Really cool. And you have to create a little bridge for yourself. The puzzle mechanics, none of them have really like blown me away. But the overall package is just really, really compelling.
Look, I know Shane works with Sony now, but as much as he's conveyed to me how artistic and engaging this game is in a way similar to, and I know Evoking Eco is high praise,
yeah.
But as much as it has a similarity to that, I'm totally in for this.
Yeah, no, I think, I mean, just based on my limited experience with it, I don't really have too many reservations recommending that people check it out.
What else you guys been playing? Andrea, what else have you been playing? Anything else interesting?
Well, as you said, you've caught me playing Reckoning. That's all I've been playing.
I know. How did you get back? So I was giving you a lead. How did you get pulled back into Reckoning?
What it came down to was it was like 2 or 3 weeks ago. I had some time on like a weekend, and I was like, oh, I want to play some games. And I originally wanted to play some Mass Effect multiplayer with one of the new missions, and none of my friends were on. And that is a game that is next to impossible to play with public people with matchmaking.
You think so? Because it's so class driven. I would have thought it'd been just the opposite.
Well, it's all cooperative,
right?
Which means if you don't get people that are there to commit, I mean, you it's easy to just drop out. And I have found that when you go into public matchmaking, it's really impossible to find a good group of people who are, one, on their mics. A lot of people who play in online matchmaking and co-op games don't use their mics, which defeats the fucking purpose of playing a co-op game, first and foremost.
Well, did you... You know, we had a big discussion about that last week.
Oh, I missed it. I'm sorry.
We had a huge discussion about this whole idea of how adversarial the online space has become. And it's a problem. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that was brought up in that conversation, I'd be interesting what you would respond to this, is that we said, you know, and this is something that Jeff comes back to evidently a lot, because at least people called you out for it, of anonymity being the shield behind which these people hide. And that if we got rid of that and we had real world logins, that everyone would be good players.
You know you were challenged.
You know we're challenged on that.
I never said everyone would be good players. I think it would change the playing field a lot.
So what's happening with Mass Effect 3?
It's going to be
well. I mean, that certainly would change the playing field. But I don't think that's necessary. What I think is that if you agree to go online into a public matchmaking arena where you know you're going to be playing a cooperative game with other people that you do not know, if you're not prepared to talk to them to use your microphone and actually work with them, then why are you playing a cooperative game? Why aren't you playing a PvP game like Call of Duty or Battlefield? Because those are games where you're playing against each other and you don't necessarily need to talk. Obviously, talking to your teammates in those games is helpful as
well.
What
if I know the game well enough I don't feel like I need to talk? What if I know what I'm supposed to do?
No, when you're playing a cooperative game where it's like a horde style where you have to work together to take down a common enemy, where you're not taking down other players, you're taking down strictly AI, like you need to be talking to each other and working together and coordinating your attacks. And if you're not prepared to do that, why are you playing?
I think people have such a bad experience that oftentimes they just want to check out and not and pretend like they're not playing with other people.
I feel it's less about that and more about some people just being like, I want to do what I want to do and fuck everybody else. Like, I mean,
maybe
I have bad experiences all the time in online multiplayer, particularly being a woman in the online multiplayer space. It can be very hostile at times, but I keep going back because I love particular games. Like, I have had really good experiences playing in public matchmaking in Gears of War 3. Like, I've been able to make a lot of really great friends and play in completely public games and not know anybody in my crew that I run with in Horde. But for some reason in Mass Effect 3, it's really, really difficult to get a crew together. And that is one of the games that the difficulty level is so high, even on like the easiest bronze level, that if you don't have a crew, like if they drop out and you're by yourself, you're done for. Like, you maybe will survive a couple of waves unless you're super, super leveled up.
No, it might have a little bit to do with the fact that Mass Effect is, you know, this is multiplayer's first for that series, right? So the core player base is probably...
I think it also speaks to the sort of design they went for. I mean, there's something about the Mass Effect multiplayer that is specifically intended to be played by a squad.
Right.
And a squad necessarily implying that it's people who are familiar playing with each other and have some agreed upon conversations about who's going to play what role, how they're going to tag team things. Are we going to go left? Are we going to go right? When we talk about, are we going to go get these guys right now? Hey, I need help over here, and being able to count on when I say, I need some help.
Totally agree. But that experience is divorced from the single player experience, which is the core of the game, right? You don't have any. So you have to sort of have this, you know, already be into multiplayer, or maybe, I mean, I get the feeling that there's probably a bunch of people that are just single player RPG players that are like, oh, multiplayer, and I love this game, so let's see what it's about. Well, and maybe they're not social, or maybe
one of them right here, because Andrea, you were shunted back off to Kingdoms of Amalur.
I was, yeah. And people, you know, listeners of We Can Confirm know that I'm a gigantic Mass Effect fangirl. Mm-hmm. And I love that series. And I spent a lot of time playing multiplayer when the game was first released. But I've had a lot of trouble going back for these weekend events, these operation events, because I can't get a good group to play together. And the public matchmaking is really bad. So I said, what do I want to play? What if I had a really solid, enjoyable experience playing on my own? And that for me has been Kingdoms of Amalur. And I know a lot of people had a lot of bad things to say about that game.
I don't think so.
Not us.
It was good. I loved it.
Yes, you guys obviously did, but the people I know outside of this circle.
Wait, what?
I do know other people, Jeff. Sorry.
Motherfucker.
I have absolutely loved playing that game, and this is a game that I've really enjoyed, the grind. I know we always talk about this RPG grind, and that game to me is a really fun grind, and I've had a really great time with it. And I have honestly, I've put about 60 hours in now, and I'm only about probably 75% of the way through the main campaign, because I've spent all my time doing the guild quests and the side quests. So
it's like
faction quests. Yeah,
it's like Oblivion on speed.
Or the combat, Oblivion, the combat Skyrim is really fun.
Or it's very streamlined. It's also very similar to Fable in certain ways.
Yeah, it's sort of a mashup, I guess, between those. But it definitely feels to me like an Elder Scrolls game, streamlined, so there's not any downtime. You never find yourself getting caught wandering off doing, you know, you do side quests, but you're not ever sort of just lost or exploring. It's really great on getting you point to point, and you always feel like you're accomplishing something every few minutes.
So I'm going to admit this is completely a dumb position to take, and mea culpa, I'm guilty of it. I kind of want to go back and play more, but at the same time, the fact that the studio is gone and everything they went through and how rocky that all fell apart, and I had really enjoyed the game in its moment.
Taste in your mouth?
It's very bittersweet, right?
Yeah.
It's very bittersweet, and I just don't know what to do with it. You know, it's do I go back to Kingdoms of Amalur, where I was 30 hours in and probably have another 30 to 40 hours ahead? Or do I go play Last Story and then, you know, Borderlands 2 and then something else after that? Because on top of all that, going back and now it's like, you know, I have a really, really strong, fun, good mental picture of that. And I just wonder how it would be if I went back to it. And then, of course, on top of that, the downside of like what happened with them.
I really don't want the business of the business to affect your gameplay experience.
It sucks, doesn't it? It's really stupid.
It does, because if you think about the general consumer, they don't know all of the tax problems that 38 Studios went through. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? And the loans and the overspending and blah, blah, blah. All the business of the business, like, that should never affect your gameplay experience. And while I know in my mind that there's probably never going to be a follow-up to Amalur, which kind of sucks in my opinion, because they spend so much time building this lore in this game, I don't let that affect how much enjoyment I get in my gameplay sessions.
Don't count the state of Rhode Island out yet. They have a lot of
money to recoup, right?
Exactly. Yeah. State of Rhode Island might be the next big recruiter to be on the video game.
Rhode market. Island Productions presents
R.I.P. That would be R.I.P. bringing
back from the dead.
Back from the dead. Yeah. So as we get ready to bring this thing to a close and bring it back, we're going to do the finishing moves.
Finishing moves.
And with a cat in his lap.
Oh, it's pretty cute though.
It's the new 12-year-old girl version of Jeff Cannata.
This came up here, guys.
It is an adorable cat. My finishing move is, I read an interesting article this week on TheVerge.com about how the guys designing Codblop's new perk system, which you may have heard about on this show briefly, mm-hmm. and then not so much anymore, we basically went back to scratch because they've been playing a lot of Carcassonne, a board game.
That was also brought up. I remember that.
Yes. And they redesigned the perk system by thinking about what would COD be like as a board game? What would the multiplayer be like as a board game? And they carded it out and came up with the perk system at like a deck building game. And I just love that. I mean, obviously, I'm a big fan of board games and I try to bring it up into the show as much as I can. But I love when great game ideas can cross-pollinate across mediums because... there's these systems in place that board game designers have been using. Board game designers obviously borrow liberally from video game designers and back and forth. And I think it's wonderful when designers can be open-minded enough to sort of take inspiration from anywhere and let those kinds of experiences influence games. I think it's always to the better.
Absolutely.
And I thought that was a great article and really excited me about the fact that these guys are that what is the ultimate of digital video game experiences can still learn from something as old school as Carcassonne. So
awesome. Yeah, it really is great to see that ability for ideas to translate across different games. And my finishing move is one of those, and that is Man versus Machine for Team Fortress 2, which if you haven't already downloaded, I have no idea what you're waiting for. If you have a Steam account and have Team Fortress 2 and have been away for a little while, Man versus Machine is a new mode they've introduced that completely turns it on its head. It is a horde mode-like experience within the Team Fortress engine. There's only two maps right now, but it plays really well. It's a ton of fun. You get to upgrade your weapons in between matches. It's got this very cool robot onslaught mode. And it what's cool is that you've always had this team-on-team ability to take advantage of your class-based system, but it was constantly in a combat arena where you were facing other live people. Here you get this ebb and flow of you guys coming back together, putting your group together, powering up your weapons, figuring out how you're going to attack, and then taking on the next onslaught. And it is really well done. And hats off to Valve for always keeping up with what's going on.
Iterating.
Exactly. But by the way, it also scares me that freaking Gabe Newell tripped 2,000 hours in Dota 2. Dude, fucking finish Half-Life 3, please, already. Okay.
That's called no oversight.
Step away from the Dota 2 for a couple of fucking minutes so I can have Half-Life 3 and then play all the Dota you want to, okay? But seriously, 2,000 hours. Holy cow. Holy cow. Leahy would be proud.
It's good to be the king.
It's good. And how can you tell he's the king?
I mean, that's. I mean, 2000.
He doesn't have any shit on him.
Oh, yeah. He ain't got any shit on him.
Exactly.
He hasn't got shit all over him.
All right, Mr. Jeff Mattis, your finishing move.
Yes. So, a couple of iOS shout outs. Actually, really good past couple of weeks for iOS releases, believe it or not. One of them is called Oregon Trail Director's Cut. And this is not Oregon Trail, this is Oregon Trail. So it's
like an organ in your body.
Yeah, like an organ in your body. So this is basically Oregon Trail, except with a zombie theme, and you're driving a station wagon across country instead of a wagon. And but it's still got dysentery and, you know, all this stuff. But they've layered on this these extra little mini games and stuff where you're scavenging for food and, you know, collecting scrap and, you know, running away from zombie wildlife and stuff. It's
awesome.
It's really, really good. Name your party members. Anyway. Really fun stuff.
It looks like it was made on Apple too.
Oh yeah, and it looks awesome. And totally retro graphics. I love it to death. The other game that is kind of a big surprise is called Horn, and sort of released to very little fanfare considering how big and crazy the game is. But it's by the guys that did a game called Dark Meadow that was sort of, you know, got middling reviews, but it was looked really, really good. Anyway, this is Horn is sort of a, you know, Zelda meets Infinity Blade sort of thing. Gorgeous graphics. You know, it's like tap to move, so it's not, there's no virtual thumbsticks or anything. But you do, there is combat in it that's very much gesture based Infinity Blade style. But there's also, you know, you have basically a hook shot and a ranged weapon, and, you know, there's a forge mechanic and upgrading stuff. And it's very, very surprisingly deep. It's also, unlike Infinity Blade, it doesn't just loop endlessly. There's a finite beginning and end, and I don't know probably spent about an hour on it so far, and I'm really, really enjoying it. So
you mean it's more than whack-a-mole?
It's more than whack-a-mole.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah. What an idea.
Yeah,
it's so more than just whack-a-mole.
It's very cool. It's $7, but worth the purchase price if you're looking for something a little beefier that looks really, really good on your iPad. So
awesome. And Miss Andrea Renee, you get to bring us home in the anchor position.
Oh, the pressure. First thing I want to say, thank you to everybody who responded to my last finishing move about giving me recommendations for mobile games. Thank you to everyone. And my finishing move this week would be, if you guys are going to be at PAX Prime, please come say hi to me at the Machinima booth. I'll be there like all 3 days. And I would love to meet you, and we have a cool photo booth there, and we're doing lots of giveaways. So
I'm gonna go.
Very cool.
I would love to see you guys. So if you're going to be at PAX Prime in Seattle, come say hi. And summer's almost over. Release season's about to gear up. So if there's games you haven't played yet, you should definitely give them a whirl. There was a lot of really great releases this year. So you only have a couple weeks left before you kick into high.
But if you're like, this is your last call from Andrew and I.
If you're
last
like, call. Jeff and I, and we'll be at PAX. The good news is, Andrea Renee will be back here in just a couple of weeks because she's part of our adoring crew, because she's just part of the Weekend Confirmed family right here in the party house.
Guys.
There we go.
So that's it, folks. Hope you enjoyed the show. Big thanks to the Atlantis Studio Groups who had two big real acts scheduled into their studios, which are awesome in Santa Monica, and have one of their engineers here with a complete mobile rig taking care of us. If
Micah,
you saw the pictures, thank you so much, Micah and John, and everybody over at the Atlantis Group for taking care of us. Jeff Cannata, as always, at Jeff Cannata and at Totally Rad Show, and Totally Rad Show on Revision 3 and the YouTubes.
Yep.
Go to Machinima to check out the lovely Andrea Renee and also see her at PAX at the booth, as she just discussed.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else?
You can follow me on Twitter at Andrea Renee. Let's chat. You can hear Bobby rage quitting.
And Mr. Jeff Mattis, always up on mobile, indie, and everything else at Shock News Games.
Yeah, you know, and I just got to apologize real quick to the people who got a DM from me recently via Twitter because my account was hacked. So.
Really?
Yeah, I tweeted it out, you know. So
apparently
anyway.
Happened to Seth also.
Oh, really?
But I think so, based off of some responses.
Yeah, if you got a link from me in the last few days, don't click it in your DM.
All right. Thanks, everybody. That is your Weekend Confirmed, and we are going to go get our games on and enjoy the rest of this evening. Thanks so much for joining us. We will be back next week, and until then, we are one moment fantasy football.
Oh,
I should give a reminder, because we're not ready to tailgate yet. I haven't made the leagues yet. I will build the leagues this weekend, I assure you. There are going to be two 14-team leagues. I'll get it taken care of, I promise.
I can't wait this season, man. NFC West is going to be crazy. Fuck T.O., Randy Moss, you're in the win with Flynn era. It's amazing.
I'm going to remind you, Alex Smith. And on that note,
Alex Smith's going to fucking NFC championship game,
okay.
Alex Smith.
Okay.
40 yards a game.
It's happening. It's all happening.
At least he's not named Tavares. It's okay. I still love you.
Whatever.
Spoken like a true Vikings fan. All right, folks, we are Ghost.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink, Hangaway.
I need a drink, Alizé.
I need a drink,
Hangaway.
I need a drink, Champagne.
I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
I need a drink, Absolute.
I need a drink, Hypnotic.
I need a drink, NSC.
I need a drink, Gin & Tonic.
I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all help.
It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle. Cause me and my crew only know.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.